I have Wyoming Business Council, and appreciate you being here and folks who have traveled here. I see you have some members here. And so what we've done, Bob, is just remind you, too, that this is all recorded and streamed live, so when anybody's speaking into the mic. And then what we'd like you to do, if you would, just kind of introduce your team and then kind of give us a state of your agency. Just tell us what's going on, what's gone on in the last year, and you see, as you see opportunities ahead. And then we'll just go through your budget, and it'll go rather, you know, I think quickly in terms of the volume of it, but there'll probably be a lot of discussion. So, and we'll just kind of go page by page, and you can certainly point out the exceptions, and we'll want to look at quickly at each page. I would say then also Co-Chairman Bebout in the Senate and Representative Wallace will actually present your budget on the floor. So we want to make sure their questions are thoroughly vetted, and if they have to meet with you separately, those kind of things. So members, any comments before we... So with that said, the floor is yours, and welcome to the JAC.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Co-Chairman. My name is Bob Jensen. I'm the CEO of the Wyoming Business Council. Appreciate the opportunity today. I want to introduce some of our staff members and board members that are here. Diane Joyce, to my right, is our Chief Financial Officer. Ben Avery runs our Business and Industry Division. Molly Spangler runs our Investment Ready Communities Division. In addition to that, we have Nathan Becky, who is a board member and current co-chair of the board, as well as Pete Illaway and Rex Lewis, board members.
Hey, welcome.
So as a bit of an overview and addressing what's going on with the agency, I think the key word for us in the work that we do and the businesses that are in business in the state of Wyoming now is momentum. There's a lot of momentum, positive momentum in this state business-wise. By and large, the state of the business community in the state is robust and positive. Pockets that aren't, but overall, we have a lot of momentum going forward. That's not because of the Business Council, but we have participated in some of that business growth with the programs that are funded through the legislature. I think that you know, the landmark program that we administer is the Business Ready Communities program and the Community Facilities program. Those have made a positive impact on business related infrastructure across the state, and has laid the foundation for a very positive level of private sector capital investment that has fueled tax levels rising and helped diversify the economy and create jobs in a wide variety of industries all throughout the state. So as you we'll see and have seen, when we get to that later, that is our exception request related to that those programs. And I will say this, that the cuts that were implemented last year have been sustained. That was for us, it was 11.5%. Those are reflected in the fiscal year 15-16 standard budget. I will also say that the $15 million that was set aside for large business infrastructure projects that was in the Business Ready Communities program but kind of fenced off and at the governor's discretion, we do have two applications pending that our board will be reviewing next week that will utilize all of those funds. They're major impact projects, and so that will be depleted from the Business Ready Communities program. Just another point that sometimes comes up is the number of employees at the Business Council. We have, and the reason why I mention that is because it's not like a normal agency where it's, you know, you have a number of employees that you're authorized. were different than that based on the legislation that created the business council. And so we have 50 full-time employees and five part-time employees. The budget request that the governor made on behalf of the business council is a good one. We're in agreement with that. As you're probably aware, we had requested more than that in terms of an exception request for the Business Ready Communities program primarily, and that is we understand the circumstances and are happy with the request that the governor made. In particular, we're particularly interested in his note that asks for at least $10 million of that to be available at the end of the session so that we can keep projects going forward. So with that, I think we can start to move through the budget if you're...
Hey, any questions? Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The two large infrastructure projects, are those data centers?
No, they're not. One of them is for a company called Magpul Industries. They're in the shooting, hunting, and outdoor trades industry, or manufacturer and distributor of parts that are associated with the shooting industry, as well as other products that are associated with outdoor sports. And then the other one is for an expansion of the rail capacity at the Swan Rail Park south of Cheyenne.
Okay. Representative Wallace.
Mr. Chairman, I do want to bring up another issue that does relate to data centers, and that has to do with basically this brochure that I became aware of that was apparently put out by you guys and is promoting data centers. And what I want to call your attention to is that there's a statement here. Wyoming has a strong low cost of doing business story because on top of very low electricity costs, 28% below the national average across all sectors, and goes on to talk about low taxes and things. And then the only thing that is on the page is wind. And it implies, I think, dishonestly, that Wyoming's wind resource can offer great renewable energy opportunities for data centers. Has no mention of coal, has no mention of gas. We know for a fact that Cheyenne Prairie Generation Station outside of here is putting up 132 megawatts of gas to be able to supply that power. We know that YGen 3 in Gillette was built in 2010 to offset the need of power for NCAR. And so I'd just like you to kind of address why the business council would be throwing our bedrock industries, sort of looks to me like, kind of under the bus in order to promote this idea that we're putting out all this power through wind.
Do you want to comment on that, on the brochure specifically, I think, is the question?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wallace, it's not our intent to disrespect any of Wyoming's industries. We're not trying to be dishonest in any way. I would say it's just maybe an oversight on our part to not have that in there. But the truth is that wind is a component of the energy picture in Wyoming, as is coal and as is natural gas, uranium. We work in a lot of different ways to support those industries and to advance the use of those products in a variety of different venues, not just data centers. We spend a lot of time and effort working with industry to utilize those resources in ways that are diverse and more than just generating electricity. We spend some time, quite a bit of time and effort, putting together information and opportunities for people that are interested in conversion of coal into additional products besides electricity, such as motor fuels, chemical feedstocks, and other products. We also work in the effort to try and expand the export resource that's available to coal in particular. And so while the data center industry brochure may appear to be one that favors wind, it's not our intent to exclude anybody else, any other form of electricity in that. So the data center industry is one that is very sensitive to where the electricity comes from and the nature of it. Maybe that has influenced the way that brochure is put together. But the fact is that a business council spends a lot of time working to try and affect the improvement and the broader utilization of all of Wyoming's energy resources.
Okay, thank you. Representative Stepson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Jensen. And maybe before you dive into your budget, sort of another broad, big picture sort of question. And you talked about sort of the momentum in favor of economic development. I'm just wondering if, as you're dealing with companies across the state, what you're seeing as far as major roadblocks, I guess, to future economic development. I know talking with Cada and some of the folks up in our neck of the woods, there's been a lot of frustration on electricity, another issue, just being able to get timely responses as far as build out of the grid and that might be needed and some of those things. Are you seeing similar challenges around the state, or can you just address that issue generally?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Stepson, you know, I can't put my finger on any broad category of hurdle that's out there. Most of what we do is specific to local communities and the opportunities that are in local communities. We very much support the leadership in the local area and try to help them with what they perceive as their opportunities and their challenges. And so to your comment specifically on the electrical issue in Natrona County or Casper in specific, we've tried to be involved with that issue with the electric provider up there, trying to find ways to mitigate the issues that they have with electrical availability. So it's very much a cooperative effort with the local areas. I'll say that if I was to look at some hurdle that is out there, I'm not sure that we can do anything about it. It's there is some issues around federal regulatory issues, and not sure that we can do anything about that as the business council, but it is, to your question, one of the hurdles that are out there. The hurdles that we see are unique most of the time to a location, a specific location, a specific community, so we do what we can to work with the local leadership there to try and mitigate that as much as possible to be able to move a project that they feel is important to their economy forward.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Bob, just to go back a little bit to what Representative Wallace was talking about, and I know that the business council and you personally, you're all very supportive of the minerals industry, but you have to understand some of the frustration a lot of us have in our state relative to the importance of the minerals industry, and yet somehow it's overlooked somewhat. And, of course, without it, and that's the whole premise of the Wyoming Business Council years ago, was to try to be able to take advantage of our minerals to diversify the economy. And quite frankly, Business Council has been a successful venture for us. Anything we can do, I think, to talk about all of these different minerals we have is always positive for our state. And I understand the sensitivity for trying to bring someone from California to Wyoming and how they understand and want the molecules or the electrons that leave in our power lines to be green rather than black or whatever color it might be if they're gas, if it's generated by gas. But I think any time you can talk about the importance of minerals to our state, I think that's appreciated by all. You know, without minerals, and one of the things that's going on in our state, and I was looking at the funding levels we've had for the Business Council over the past 4, 5, 6 years, I would guess we've probably given $600-700 million that's to the Business Council to try to diversify our economy, to help with infrastructure and those things. 70% of that comes from minerals, and now our state's under attack, not only the coal industry with EPA, but the permitting process, the BLM, the Forest Service. And so as you move forward with the Business Council, a lot of the things that we may think about doing is how do we protect and help Wyoming's mineral industry to be able to continue to facilitate the growth of government that we have and with the revenue stream we need. All you have to do is look at the coal bed methane play up in the Powder River Basin, you know, and what's happened there. It's dead. It's over. Is there a resource there? Sure it is. Wyoming has plenty of resources. We just can't get to them. So I guess an overall editorial comment, Mr. Chairman, is the importance of minerals for what you're trying to do. And I, you know how supportive I am of the Business Council. Yet anything we can do and see and be visionary about our mineral side only helps all of us. And that I think that's what, you know, I'm with Representative Wallace on that. And I'm not trying to say what she was getting at. I don't think she's picking on you. But you just get frustrated when everybody's coming at you outside our state. And once in a while you pick up something within our state that is probably an oversight, and I understand that.
Okay. Bob? Hey, anything else? And I think there was – you have a response? Go ahead.
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout. I couldn't agree more. You're not going to find any organization that is more supportive of the broad base of industry, energy, mineral industry, than the Business Council. And so – one instance of us maybe putting the wrong picture on, I understand what you're saying, and I will look at that. But the fact is that does not define what the Business Council does and how supportive we are of industries that are directly and indirectly involved with the everything from continuing to dig and chip to making something that is of much higher value going forward. We must have about six, at least, projects that are pending that we're involved with, either directly or indirectly, that involve ways that we can diversify our economy in the mineral industry. And that is possible. And they take lots of vision and lots of time, and it's a very long-term effort. But we're in that, we're in the middle of that, and we are very supportive of that. Now, the use of those resources with industries such as manufacturing, such as data centers, believe me, they understand that their energy is coming from coal and natural gas here. It's also coming from wind. They just don't want to talk about it. And so I just want to just let everybody here know that there is there is no effort at all. And in fact, it's just the exact opposite. We understand the importance of the mineral industry. We understand what it means to the state. We understand how important it is to every business in this state and the operation of government in this state. But to be honest, I mean, government operates because of business and revenues that come from business. And so our charge, as you know, is to try and work to diversify the economy of the state. It's always going to be an energy state. We're always going to be proud of the fact that we have, we supply the nation's energy resources. We want to supply more of those energy resources going forward, and we work towards doing that. And we also work towards using those energy resources in state in a way that continues to help diversify the economy.
Okay, thank you. We appreciate that. Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I really appreciate Senator Bebout, who is far more articulate than I am, and I do appreciate your comments. I think that the point that I would like to leave you with, however, is that in the circumstance where our mineral industries are being attacked literally from every direction these days, when some outfit like Microsoft comes calling and says, we want to take advantage of your energy costs, which are 28% lower than any place else in the country, but we don't want you to mention coal, that the state of Wyoming push back and say, whoa, the reason that we have energy costs 28% low is because of our gas and coal resources that we develop responsibly in this state, and that's the condition that you come here and that you're benefiting from. And it's a communication thing if we buy into this deception that the world can be run on wind and solar, then we're contributing to the demise of the industries that are really providing the benefit.
And I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman.
And I think the question is, don't you agree?
I do agree, but I do want to make one more point. I don't want to belabor it. I think we're on the same page here. We did have that conversation with Microsoft. They understand it. I think of all the companies, they get it more than most. In fact, they get it so much that they're here with another project taking stranded biogas and putting it into a fuel cell to operate an IT pack. That has implications for stranded natural gas as well, and they're working with the City of Cheyenne and Western Research Institute in Laramie to put that pilot plant together to be able to understand how to better utilize and more efficiently utilize fossil resources. So, that's. I just wanted to make sure you were aware of that, and that we understand what you're saying, and we're on the same page, I think.
Okay. Any other? I think we can get going on the budget then. Unless you have any other opening comments, Director. Appreciate it.
No thanks.
CEO, I guess you're not the director.
Well, that's
you're the CEO.
Whatever. Bob is good.
Okay.
Okay. So. Our standard budget, as submitted to you through the governor's office, essentially starts well on page 3, I guess, is the overall full budget. We're sort of split into three different categories here: the regular business council, the Main Street program, and the investment-ready communities division. So we'll start on page 10. That's okay with you?
Yeah.
Essentially, that's the standard budget request. It starts to, it just gives you the overview of what the business council does. And on page 12, you see the governor's recommendation that he approves the standard budget. We have exception budgets here, a funding shift of $103,000, which was denied by the governor's office. We have computer software reviewed and approved by the ETS with a recommendation. And by the way, you know, those numbers that were modified by ETS and recommended by the governor, I mean, those are, we get that. They know more about that than we do. So that's fine. The federal funding reduction of $1.5 million, that's on page 16. That just recognizes decreases that have happened over the years, primarily with the CDBG program, and just gets that. It's more of an accounting move than anything else.
Okay.
Unit 102, 1201 is on page 21. The recommendation is for rural development of $775,000 and Main Street of just over $1 million. And, you know, it has, again, some hardware exceptions, but those are minor compared to everything else. Any questions on those?
Questions, committee? Okay, we're just kind of going through and reading page by page as we work through this division.
Okay.
Okay.
Chairman, I do have a question.
Yeah, go ahead, Mr. Gorsuch.
On the CDBG, is there any, and I know we're just taking out of the budget because we don't see the federal funds coming, is there any other programs like that? That really helped a lot of smaller communities get started on some economic development projects. It was sort of like a planning grant.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of them, and I pick a small community, and they've used it. Is it pretty much over? Is there a chance there will be some more funding coming? Is there another mechanism we could utilize to try to get access to similar funds?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, we still expect to get funding for the CDBG program, Community Development Block Grant Program. We're expecting something in the neighborhood of $2.5 million, plus or minus. You're right, that is for you know, a variety of projects that really don't fit the state's funding mechanisms. So it is useful to help pretty much smaller communities. And that's the structure of that program, is that if you're a MSA or a Metropolitan Statistical Area, 50,000 plus, you get your own allocation. So Cheyenne and Casper get their own allocation. This is $2.5 million that goes to all the rest of the state, basically. And so we expect there to be an allocation of that coming in this year. But to your point about the additional help for planning and other functions that communities need to do, last 2 years ago, we added a component to the Business Ready Communities program to allow for planning. And I think you were the chairman of the Minerals Committee then, and we're instrumental in getting that bill passed. That's been very successful in terms of communities being able to supplement or, you know, use planning dollars to understand better what the implications of a particular project might be for their community. And if community development block grant funding isn't available, which is frequently the case, then these planning dollars are available to help them do that, and that's been a successful program.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that was my next question. I recall doing that, and I can't remember how we set up the percentages. Is that something we left up to the discretion of the council, and how much you might do? It was set up primarily to help with the CDBG, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's an overall limit of about $1 million. Per biennium available to communities to apply for planning. So, you know, those are grants that come in the realm of, you know, $25,000 to do a study on whether or not it makes sense to, you know, build a swimming pool or something like that, you know.
Swimming pool?
Well, that's a bad example. Yeah. I'm sorry, but.
No, that's all right. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, continue.
On page 26 is the Main Street program. This is an instrumental program for many small communities throughout the state. It's been very successful. You know, the Business Council's approach to economic development is a kind of a three-legged stool. It's business development and support of existing businesses in the state, entrepreneurship activities and startups, also working with people that aren't in the state to help them understand the value of locating and expanding their operations inside the state. That's recruitment activities. And then the community development piece, which is a little different than most other economic development organizations. This is the component that I call it workforce retention. The community development is a critical piece of overall comprehensive economic development in terms of helping communities improve their amenities for existing people that live there, that work in the businesses that are there, and also make them attractive for people that might want to be there. And so we get involved with a lot of activities that help local leadership in local communities with what they see as important for them to be able to improve their community. We try to put the resources that we've been given by the legislature to good use to try and support that local leadership. And so the community development component is kind of where the Main Street program falls. And a lot of advice and support and technical assistance funding to help communities with strategies that can improve their downtown, which in many cases across the state is their main economic development engine, ways that they can involve local leadership and also local businesses in improving those downtown facades and improvement of the actual business infrastructure, ways that they can have improve their streetscapes and that kind of thing. Main Street program provides a lot of advice on that and has been very successful in terms of its involvement of the local businesses and leveraging private sector capital investment on top of the state seed money.
Mr. Chairman?
Okay.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Dr. Bob, can you give us two or three examples of Main Street program developments or projects around the state that you think are successful or illustrative of what you just said?
I would point to Rollins as sort of the poster child for success with the Main Street program. They've taken a downtown that was, I'll just say, unremarkable in terms of its view shed, and turned it into a downtown that this state can be really proud of, and particularly the people that live in Rollins. The Depot Project, the Rainbow Teton Project, the downtown streetscape, we just had a project approved by this LIB this morning to improve the facades of the businesses that are on Main Street. That is a great example of ways that the Main Street program can impact a local community. And really what it does is it gets the interest of the local business people to be involved with improving their own lot in life, if you will, and make a difference for not just them but the entire community. Rollins is a great place. Evanston is another one. Sheridan is another one. They all get it, and I think you know all Mary. You all know Mary Randolph. She's a very important resource for that program going forward. Britta Fuller works directly with the Main Street programs. They just had a meeting that I sat in on for a little bit. I think it was on Tuesday, of all the Main Street managers and. By and large, there's a lot of interest and a lot of activity going forward with that program. It's an important program. It's a piece of the effort to try and make a difference for communities to make their towns attractive for the people that live there and the people that want to move there.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, Bob. I appreciate that. So everybody needs to come visit.
Hey, Representative.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Jensen, and this goes beyond just Main Street. It's kind of more of a global question, but I know we fund you guys different. We don't get into your personnel necessarily, but I think it would help on some of these if you could give us a one-pager that shows, you know, out of those 55 employees or so, where they're assigned, just so. You know, I know Main Street's kind of a lean, pretty lean program. Some other programs take a little bit more personnel, but I think is that extra level of transparency would be helpful for us as we work through the budget if we could get that.
Okay. Mr. Co-Chair.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, before we leave Main Street, and, you know, I've always thought that with Main Street, Wyoming, it should be more within the borders and necessarily outside the borders. And when I look at your budget on page 29, your object code 227, 222, it looks like you're making a shift to do more in-state than out-of-state travel and those kind of things. Was that a conscious shift, or is there Are there some out-of-state things you needed to attend that you're not doing now, or did you have that discussion about let's just do more in our state?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, we made a conscious decision that we were going to curtail travel across the board, not eliminate it, but just cut back on it. But one of the more effective tools that we employ specifically with the Main Street program is this, they have a Main Street conference every year in some locale, and we put together a visit to a successful Main Street community located around where that conference is. And we take a group of people that are involved with Main Street throughout the state and help them see the lessons learned from other locations. So it's very valuable in terms of how can you get stuff done? What are other people doing? What are the strengths and weaknesses that we see in other rural communities? And what can we take away from that to help our Main Streets be more effective?
Senator Perk.
There's not a question here, just an editorial comment. I actually went to one of the national conventions, the Main Street National Convention, a couple years ago in Philadelphia. And you wouldn't think there was a lot of things that would translate directly to Wyoming, but there were. And at the time, I was on the Downtown Development Authority in Casper, and it was a valuable insight and valuable resource. There really is a lot of interchange and knowledge transfer that happens with those events.
Okay, Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And looking at these travel line items, I think I need a little bit more understanding of exactly what's going on here. So we got pretty big swings from base to standard. We've got travel in-state, travel out-of-state, permanently assigned vehicles, travel for donated service, IS, travel donated services, OS, board commission travel reimbursement, and that board commission travel reimbursement goes from 43.6 in the base budget to 19,000. That's a pretty dramatic drop. I would assume your board's about the same size and shape. Anyway, if you could just kind of explain what each one of those is and kind of why those shifts between base and standard.
You want to help me with that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wallace, my name is Diane Joyce. I'm the CFO for the Business Council. In regards to the Main Street budget, as a result of the net to zero exercise and looking at travel, Mary and her staff took a look at all the travel that they were doing in-state, out-of-state. In regards to the donated services travel, that has to do with assisting with travel expenses for people that attend the national conferences. But as a result of the net to zero exercise, Mary realized that there needed to be some adjustments made in the travel series. And one of those, as you notice, is a big drop in travel expenses for board members. They have, while they still do have a board that meets, they have curtailed voluntarily on their travel expenses. So this is really just a reallocation of resources to accommodate the expected travel that they see for the coming biennium. Yes.
Okay. Any other? Thank you. Any questions? Okay. Continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The next unit is 1610. That's the Business Ready Communities Program. It's on page 32. The standard budget is $50 million. Governor approved the standard budget. The exception budget is for, we requested $30 million. In addition to that, the governor recommended $10 million as a one-time funding increase and recommended it be effective immediately upon the signature for the budget. And so if that's the case, that would make that budget $60 million for the biennium. This is the biggest piece of our budget. It's the program that has had the significant impacts across the state in terms of business-related infrastructure that has supported private sector capital investment that is where job creation comes from. And so this is kind of the momentum piece that I was talking about earlier. All of these things mold together and fit together, but the Business Ready Communities program is arguably one of the most effective tools that I think Wyoming's ever had, funded by the legislature to drive investment that really stimulates and is the foundation for the economic growth in the state.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Co-Chair.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to walk through on page 34 to make sure I understand your breakdown on the money. You say currently available for future. Is that money that was in the 13-14 budget that you haven't appropriated? Is that what that is?
Excuse me just a second.
It's been appropriate. I'm sorry you haven't spent.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, yes, that is correct. But this was done as of the budget submission, and obviously there's been some updates to these numbers.
That was my next question. Yeah. What happened in January with the SLIB board meeting, I guess, this morning? Was that the one that – how much of the $20 million is gone? All of it? What do you know at this time?
I do. You want to take it?
Oh, I can go ahead. Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, going in as a result of the SLIB meeting this morning and taking into consideration those projects that were approved by the SLIB today, there is currently $21.2 million of funds that are unobligated and unencumbered for projects. Going forward, there are going to be projects that we're going to have for the February SLIB and the April SLIB. For the February SLIB, we're going to have $18 million in projects. $15 million of that comes out of the set-aside funds for large projects that was noted in the budget footnote. And then for the April SLIB, we're going to have another $1.6 million of projects that are going to be going before the SLIB at that time. So at the end of this biennium, we will have a balance of about $1.6 million.
Mr. Chairman, okay. So the governor set aside $15 million, and now you're having a February meeting that wasn't included in your budget, so that's something that's come up. Is that the MagPul?
Yes.
Okay,
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Is this a good time to talk about that?
Sure.
Tell me what it is, what they're asking for, what commitments we've made.
We have an application from Laramie County for a loan package of $5 million and a grant package of $8 million to facilitate a two-pronged incentive package for MagPul to locate their manufacturing assembly and distribution operations in Cheyenne, moving out of Colorado. The package that will be coming before our board facilitates the acquisition of an existing 68,000 square foot building in Cheyenne to make their MagPul's move here.
Who are you going to buy that from? Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Who are you going to buy that from?
Go ahead, Mr. Chairman.
Leeds will be buying that from a private owner that owns the building now.
So you're going to buy a private. This is a temporary one, and then you're going to turn around and build a new one. Is that what that is?
That's correct.
I'll let you go ahead and explain the whole deal. I'm sorry for interrupting. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. So this facilitates their immediate move here, which was important to them to be able to do that. What this does is it purchases that and upgrades it so that they can operate there for a period of 2 years. While that's going on, they will be designing and building with Leeds a larger facility that facilitates their growth going forward. That will be built in the East Business Park that Leeds owns. And so what it does is it allows for them to move their operations here immediately, operate, and then continue their growth pattern into a facility that enables that to happen. And I'm sorry, just one other point. This other building then becomes an available asset for the community for additional companies that may be interested in coming to the city for to locate here. So it's 68,000 square feet of space that could go to other manufacturing companies or other distribution companies or other companies that need space to be able to move into.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, let me summarize. So there's a $5 million loan, $8 million grant, and part of the money is going to be used to buy a building from an existing private property owner that you're going to upgrade, and then you're going to give it to, when they move out, you're going to give it to the Cheyenne Leeds, so they're going to own it?
Leeds will own that building.
So that money has gone to Leeds, so how much is that of the $13
million? It's about $3
million. $3? Okay.
So that's all grant?
That's yes. Grant. Is that the grant or the loan?
That's the grant.
Then the remaining money will be utilized, a combination loan. So there'll be $5 million loan, $5 million grant to build the new facility. And how many square feet is that?
It's estimated that it will be 108,000 square feet. It may be more than that. Maybe it won't be probably any less than that. So,
and what kind of commitments are you receiving in return for doing this from them? I mean, you never know what's going to happen in the business world. I understand that, but I guess they're moving 100 people and
close to 100. They've conservatively estimated that they'll bring about 91 jobs here, but they employ more than that now in Colorado. So, we try to be as conservative as possible on those estimates, but that's what they're committing to, and we anticipate that it will be more than that. In addition to that, we've had at least two conversations with other companies that are in their supply chain that are also interested in expanding their operations into Wyoming to continue their supply relationship with Magpul. So we see this as a sort of a flagship project that Magpul is a very visible company in this industry. It brings a manufacturing component that doesn't really exist here in this county. But it also attracts other companies that are in this trade to be able to come here and locate here too. So in addition to that, not just for Laramie County, but for the state and as a whole, there's a large shooting, hunting, and outdoor trades industry here already in the state. And so what it does is it helps us talk to other companies outside of the state that are in this space to help them understand what are the benefits of Wyoming as a place to do business. And it's not just the cost. It's the regulatory stability that you all are responsible for going forward. So we're at a show right now in Las Vegas called the SHOT Show. It's like the biggest industry trade show in the nation, and getting all kinds of interest from companies outside of Wyoming, and we're supporting companies inside of Wyoming too. So this is a project that builds on the manufacturing base of the state, but also expands the shooting, hunting, and outdoor trades industry, which we've always been working on.
Appreciate all that. Mr. Chairman, who's going to own the $10 million building after it's built for them to move into?
Leeds will own that.
They'll own that, too.
They'll own that. And
they're going to be rent.
Yes, there will be rent paid. There will be a deferral.
Will the rent come to the state, or will it go to Leeds?
Well, Leeds will pay. Leeds will be responsible for paying the loan back. Laramie County is the applicant. But the company will make rent payments. Leeds will be able to pay the loan component back, and then lease payments will go to Leeds, and then the company will have an option to purchase that building down the road if they choose to.
Yeah. And Mr. Chairman, where I'm going with all these questions is this happens not just in Cheyenne. I'm not picking on Cheyenne right now, but where we have these situations we give to the economic development groups, they bring jobs in, and they end up owning the building, and then the state's kind of left out of it, and then they reap the benefits of it. And Don, are we trying to get a handle on that? The amount of money involved in that, has that been requested? Are we looking at that? You know, that's one of the things I'm interested in. How much money have we provided through this kind of a mechanism has gone to these economic development groups to do what it was intended, create jobs, but then when it's all said and done, they still have the money and the assets in the state of Wyoming, we have the jobs, and how that works and how much money is involved in that scenario.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, I don't have those numbers. We can get those to you. But that's part of the strategy that we employ, is trying to get money through the Business Ready Communities program, the recapture of those funds into those communities so that they have.
Understand. Funds. I just want to know how much.
Okay. We'll get to that. But I guess my point is that that's part of what we want to see happen. We think that's a good thing, to be able to have economic development funding for communities so that they're not continually, I mean, and this is not a slam or anything, but they'll have some funding to be able to do some economic development efforts on their own with the funding that has come from the state's grants and loans to them. The loans already come back to the program. The grants, the recapture of those funds stays with the community, and it's specifically required that they use those funds for only economic development purposes going forward.
And then when those, Mr. Chairman, when those revolving loans come back to the state, do they revert or do they stay in the pool?
They stay in the pool, Mr. Chairman.
That's the other question. I'm wondering how much money has come back through that as well.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebaugh, we'll get you those numbers.
Thank you.
The loan component of this has not it's just sort of recently been started to be utilized more. So we don't have a lot of those. So
Mr. Chairman, then we do have enough funding to take care of Magpul, and it's in your hands and the governor's hands, and you're moving forward, I guess, the summation of that.
That's correct.
And essentially, at the end of the year, all the money that you have for business-ready communities will be spent other than $1 million.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Okay, just a question. Just media reports. I'll go ahead. Go ahead. You want to add something to?
Well, she was whispering in my ear there.
I saw that.
We have.
So I know how you get your marching orders.
Well, yeah, thank you.
Go ahead. Yeah, it's like the rest of us. Go ahead.
The question was for the balance of this fiscal year, and that the answer is correct. We do have additional demand coming forward with other projects for June, basically. So.
And hence effective immediately. Okay, just a question on this, on the Magpul. This media reports that their corporate was going to relocate to Texas, leave Colorado. Why not Wyoming?
Yeah, that's a...
How many folks is that, too?
Oh, that's estimated to be somewhere between 8 and 10 people. Magpul has made a corporate decision that they want to diversify their location. They've been... they feel like they've been stung a little bit by being in Colorado and not particularly seeing this circumstance come. And they want to be in locations that they can feel comfortable that they won't be having to do this again in the future. The Texas decision, they just have made a business decision that that's what they want to do. That decision, in terms of a location, hasn't been finalized yet. You know, I'm an eternal optimist, and I think that once they get here and they see the way business is done in Wyoming, I think that we have a chance to get more of those type of jobs here with that company than what we currently are seeing that they're, you know, that they'll bring in this package.
What about the 91 jobs you referenced? I mean, those folks are just a few miles south of us working today. At manufacturing jobs, they're going to retain their jobs and just shift which way they commute each day. Is that what's been referenced to you? I mean, most of there are going to be layoffs in northern Colorado, 60 miles away or whatever it is. And
we don't have a handle on that. You know, they just had this. The day that they made the announcement is the day they notified their employees. So it'll be to be seen.
Yeah.
If any of those employees are going to be driving north, I think that probably some of them will. Some of them probably will stay there and commute. Some of them will come up and move here. I think some will that already are here will get jobs there. And I think that this will probably have an impact beyond the Wyoming, Colorado region. I think, you know, just from the information that we're getting nationally, on interest in Wyoming as a place for this industry to grow and thrive, I think other people from across the country are going to be looking at Wyoming as a place to come and work and be involved with this industry. I don't have any facts or figures or, you know, studies on that, but...
It's momentum.
It's momentum. That's the right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. CEO Bob, a couple questions for you. First of all, on the deals like we have with Magpul, where in the end Leeds gets the building, and ultimately, if there's a lease option, sounds like is kind of in the works for this deal. So if the option's exercised and the money comes back to Leeds, are there any restrictions on that to where that's used to stay in a business ready type of community? I know it's not business ready because it's in Leeds' hands, but I mean, is there any restrictions on it about can use or if that gets converted to cash from a sale that Leeds can use it however it wants to?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, there are restrictions. The money that comes back in a recapture has to be used for other economic development purposes. And one of the questions that we have on applications from organizations going forward is how are you utilizing the prior funds that have been recaptured to facilitate either matches or, you know, investment into the next project? So that's always a question that we ask. We always encourage the community or the county or whoever the applicant is to make sure that they're utilizing those recapture funds in a way that facilitates their ability to have more robust applications through us. But if they don't use those funds for future BR Business Ready Communities applications, they still have to be used for other economic development purposes. They can't go to standard, you know, filling potholes and stuff like that.
Mr. Chairman, so if they want to use that money to enhance the salaries of existing Leeds, since we're picking on Leeds in our example, is that a development? Is that an economic development purpose?
Part of the money that goes, Mr. Chairman and Senator Perkins, part of the money that goes is recaptured can be used to support ongoing operations of an economic development entity. So I wouldn't characterize it as enhancing the salaries, but I would say that some of the communities in the state need help with keeping their economic development efforts alive. And so part of the funding recapture can be utilized for that.
Is there a percentage on that?
Less than 50%.
Okay. Any other questions on business ready communities?
Mr. Chairman.
We're about ready to move on to community facilities,
one more.
I think we have more questions.
One more.
Senator Perkins and then Representative Stubson.
Then
Representative Burkhardt.
Then me.
Thank you.
And then Representative Estes.
Is the list of projects that are the applications that you'll be looking at in these meetings that we've got over the next little while, is that confidential?
Some of them are and some of them aren't, depending on how far they are along with the community that or the applicant.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, would it be helpful if we had the list of at least the things that aren't confidential?
We can do that.
That'd be great. Okay. Supply
Thank
that
you.
To us. Thank you. I think Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Jensen, in looking at your budget in the 1610, I mean, the way I view it or the way it looks to me anyway is that every dollar that we appropriate through this goes to loans or goes to grants, and I'm assuming then that the administrative costs of those are absorbed in other parts of your budget. I just want to make sure that's accurate.
That is accurate, Mr. Chairman.
Hey, Representative Burkhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Jensen, just a quick question. You said that you were at the SHOT Show. You had a booth there. Is that active recruiting or just information?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhardt, it's both. We take existing Wyoming businesses to that show every year, and then we also use it to meet new companies as well. So. It's a multi-purpose event. We've gone to it for years.
Okay. Representative Esquivel had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Bob, I think when I first decided to run for office, one of the biggest things I heard was that Wyoming kept losing its most valuable resource, and that was our children after they graduated college or even high school were leaving the state of Wyoming. And as we made reference earlier to this Magpul project, that a good majority of those jobs are, and those paychecks are going to be going back to Colorado. And I think that's the way it is around the whole state in a lot of respects. But I would like to get some information back, and I don't know if you're the right entity to do that, to show us exactly, I mean, even with state employees, Mr. Chairman, how many of them actually make their paychecks in Wyoming but probably spend them in other states.
Bob, and I think we had some information on that. There's about 2,000 a day, if I recall, that are traveling. But if you could tell us particularly with, you know, what you think in some of our state efforts through your agency.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Escobel, I don't know, and I don't think anybody knows exactly what will happen with this particular project in terms of where the workforce is going to come from. I think that we have a good shot at getting most of those employees to be local employees and live in Wyoming. And to the point about the commuting, I think that is an issue with border towns, not just Cheyenne, but a lot of border towns. And I think that the last numbers I heard was that somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 go both ways. People
right.
that live here work down there. People that live there work up here. And so it's a two-way street, so to speak.
I know in my neck of the woods, we got a lot of folks commuting to North Dakota now, so no doubt. Okay, so, very good. Any other comments, or did I cut you off?
No, that's fine.
Thank you. Anything else on business-ready communities? Okay, well, Senator Perkins,
I opened it up there.
For...
And Mr. Chairman, just to follow back up on that point, is that, I mean, that's why the community, that's one of the reasons why the community development part is so important with respect to business-ready communities and recruitment, isn't that right?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, thank you. That's was my next point. It is. It's part of the picture. And whether we like it or not, what your place looks like, how it feels, what there is to do matters to people in small towns and large towns. And that's why, you know, part of our charge is to try and affect that positively for local communities and what they see as their need to be able to enhance the environment for the people that live and work there.
Senator Perkins, I think that's a good point. I think the legislature's done a lot of work in that area. I mean, we've been conscious of that as we've invested in communities, our schools, our colleges and university. All those things contribute to, you know, to a quality of life. That's an important piece of that. And so we all recognize that.
One last clarifying
statement,
Mr. Chairman. On the, I know we had originally maybe 2 or 3 years ago, we set aside $15 million for data centers, and we used $5 million, I think, for Microsoft. There's $10 million left. Is that in calculating any? It is not, correct?
No, it's not.
So that $10 million is still available for, is it specifically for data centers?
It is.
Specifically. And the $10 million that you're adding here, is that for other areas besides data centers, or would it be available for data centers?
Okay, Mr. Chairman, the $10 million that you're talking about is in the governor's funds. We don't have it's not in anything that we have. The funding that we're talking about for business-ready communities could go to data centers, but it's not specific to data centers. It's available to that.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I just had one follow-up.
Representative Escobel.
And Bob, when you went into those negotiations with Magpul, was there any other area in Wyoming that they were interested in, or was it pretty much just this East Business Park?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Escobel, they were looking at Laramie and Cheyenne when we first started talking to them. Over the course of time, as the conversations went on, they made the decision to focus on Cheyenne. At that point in time, we contacted Cheyenne Leeds and started working with them on that. This is a little different than how it goes most of the time. First point is we don't ever drive it. We're supportive. We talk about the state. And we generally speaking, when we get a lead like this, we put it out to the Wyoming Economic Development Association network, and communities can take the information that the company's looking for and respond as to their ability to meet the needs of the client. The client makes those decisions. We facilitate, you know, the information provided by the local community. Didn't work that way in this one because they were specifically looking at Cheyenne and Laramie. In that time frame, another company out of Colorado chose to relocate into Laramie, and they paid attention to that decision. They actually went to Laramie and looked around, not with us, on their own. And ultimately, I think probably because of the proximity of the principals in the company, they liked the Cheyenne location better. Nothing against Laramie. They just made a choice, largely the same kind of choice that they made to move their corporate headquarters to Texas. So, I mean, it's just a business decision on their part.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, so, Mr. Chairman, they were just interested in moving into Wyoming, just not too far into Wyoming.
Apparently that's true.
Okay.
Although, I will say...
Go ahead.
Other communities did contact them directly. Gillette and Casper did. I think it's Representative Lauchs contacted them directly. So other places were on their radar.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
I know a little bit about what they do, but I imagine that those types of jobs take a special type of skill. And part of their reasoning was they don't want to really retrain a lot of their workforce.
Mr. Chairman, some of those jobs do take a certain skill set. It's manufacturing jobs, it's assembly jobs and distribution jobs. Some of them are low skill, some of them are mid-range skill. Our interest is in trying to get the higher skills here as well.
Okay. Okay, I think we're ready to move on to community facilities. Is that what you have next?
That is, and that's that comes on page 37. Exception request from us was $4.3 million for a total of $8.5. The governor denied that, and so the budget is for $4.13 for that program for the biennium.
Okay.
Go ahead. This is where the bulk of our cuts came from in the last round of cutting. We had to prioritize. That's not to say that we don't think this program is important, and we did submit at the request of this body a report on the effectiveness of the community facilities program. Just as a reminder, this program takes old schools and other surplus government buildings and allows communities to apply for funding to renovate those facilities into otherwise usable facilities for the community. It's a program that has seen a lot of success in largely smaller communities, taking assets that would have gone otherwise unused and, you know, been a blight potentially, to turn them into something that's an attractive amenity for the community. The key to this program, in my view, is that it isn't the thing that is out there to help communities be better places to live. It's a piece of the picture that communities have a tool to be able to use to be able to take an asset and get more utility from it. All of the buildings that are up and running are utilized currently that have been funded with this program.
Okay. Any questions?
Mr. Chairman?
I see that your request was altered.
Yeah, it was gone back to the standard budget.
Exactly. Okay. Mr. Co-Chair?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't have that report in front of me, but it included all of the projects from inception, did it not?
Yes.
And is that on SharePoint, Don?
I believe it is. I'll make sure.
Yeah, make sure that's on SharePoint and since inception, how much we spend. And then you also were telling us about projects that were in the pipeline. Those are obviously, that's not confidential. How many, again, are in the pipeline that you will have a meeting? And SLID Board approves which ones get it, correct?
That's
how many,
correct.
How many are in the pipeline? When's your next SLID Board meeting?
Right.
And how much is left from the current biennial budget year, the amount we're still in? How much do you have on the table now?
Okay. So I just want to make sure I got this. Just a second. We have just under $3 million in projects coming to us for which meeting?
It'll be at the April
SLIB. At the April SLIB. We have 2.7 basically in the funding right now.
And so, Mr. Chairman, you haven't. I mean, the $3 million is that's all that you have in total at this point in time. Then, in request.
Well, that's what we have that we'll be considering at our board meeting in February.
Are there more requests, Mr. Chairman, than the three?
There's another $2 million.
Then that. Okay, there's another $2 million that we're aware of for the next, what is it, February?
Yes, in February board meeting.
Okay, the last thing, Mr. Chairman, and it's a tough question and for me to ask, but for you to answer as well. Would you rather have this money in this program or in business-ready communities?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout. There are some limitations to this program. It is only for surplus government buildings or schools. It doesn't allow for any flexibility around, whether or not a new facility would make more sense for a community to have. We've talked to the Minerals Committee about this on a number of occasions and tried to change it, and there hadn't been any appetite for that. Our priority is for funding for business-related infrastructure that supports growth in the economy. That's reflected in, the budgets of the two different programs. If this was moved into the Business Ready Communities program, we do have a component of the Business Ready Communities program that goes to enhancements. It's less funding than this. The limits are different. So to directly answer your question, I think that this program works how it is, but it could work with some modifications in the Business Ready Communities program.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Representative Stupson.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Jensen, my sort of napkin math on your pending applications and what you've got left, is there going to be some requirement for effective immediately on some of these funds? Then if you...
We don't have that, Mr. Chairman, Representative Stuff, so we don't have that currently as a request now. We would accept that, but I think that we can make this work with the standard funding.
Okay. Senator Dockstader.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Jensen, maybe a few examples of what you got left out there that's coming up with the $3 million. You got another $4 million lined up. A follow-up to Chairman Bebout. Could the Business Ready program be adjusted just enough to pick up where community facilities left off? So there's two parts of that question. What's coming up and... could you tweak it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dockstader, the three projects that we'll be reviewing immediately are a project in Buffalo to revamp the Clear Creek School there, a project in Gillette that will revamp a school facility for a Boys and Girls Club, and a project in Laramie to revamp a facility for Big Brothers and Big Sisters in that community. So tell me, what was the second question?
Mr. Chairman, the follow-up is a follow-up to Chairman Beamout. He's saying, he's asking, can you, could you tweak the business ready program enough to maybe pick up where community facilities left off?
It would require a statute change, wouldn't it? Or?
No, it would just require a rule change.
Yeah, we could do that through a rule change process.
So what? What's been your most recent project?
Oh, okay. In Granger,
yeah,
Chairman,
yeah,
and Senator, there was a school change for a community center for that community. Evanston redid a cultural events renovation, and in Osage, a school was funded to for that community to have its own. They're all community centers, basically.
What is this Hyattville Cemetery District? Is that part of that?
Yes.
$12 million. Was that a new building or community center there? Or how?
That was
an old school.
That wasn't $12 million. That was.
How much was it? Was it?
Just a little over.
Oh no. Okay. I got it here. So what did you do there? It was it an old school or an old community?
Yeah, renovated
the old school. Oh no, it's 12. Gotcha.
What was the facility?
It was the cemetery. The cemetery
The cemetery district. It's the only public entity there.
I see.
It's not a incorporated community.
Okay.
So it was a facility that they owned that they wanted to renovate to have it be a more functional community center.
Okay,
that's what
great.
You see frequently are these very small communities using this for facilities that they're currently using, but they're inappropriate for
need a little work.
To use. Yeah.
Some. Okay, Senator Perkins.
Just a good question when there's a community facility and they apply and get a grant, then can they use that as part of their matching if they go back before SLIB board to get the rest? Or to get additional funds to complete the project?
Can they use this grant funding as a match if they come back for SLIB for something related to?
I'm Molly Spangler, Mr. Chairman.
You will step around to this side. And then you have to stand on your left side within 30 seconds of your right foot. And then if that doesn't work, we'll use Brett's mic. And don't sit in the seat in the back. It has an injection butt. No, we have a few tricks in here.
Thank you. Senator Perkins, they can use CFP funds to match business-ready community funds. And I believe that they can use those to match other state funds.
Okay, great, thank you. Okay, any other questions, committee? Brett, you have.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just get the committee maybe to go back to page 14. I think there's some clarification necessary on the governor's recommendation on that page.
Okay.
Page 14?
Yes, sir.
Okay, page 14, Wyoming Business Council, unit 101. Okay, I think everybody's there.
And, Mr. Chairman, the specific request here was for additional general funds associated with the funding of two different positions and a change in the funding split for those positions. The governor's recommendation specifically was to deny the increased general fund. You'll note that, and recommend the reduction of the federal funds. He then recommends that reduction in federal fund occur in the 600 series. You'll see the reference specifically to object code 626.
Okay.
And then he does, however, follow up and recommend the requested funding allocation for the two positions in the 100 series from within the existing general fund appropriation for the agency. I just wanted to clarify that. I think testimony was that it had been denied, and I didn't think that adequately captured what his exact recommendation
was. Right. Thank you. Okay. Anything else, members? Any questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Yeah. On your 900 series, and I haven't added it up, it looks like a couple million dollars to the University of Wyoming. Is this an ongoing thing? Is it just as we need to do? That's a lot of money, and what are you getting for what you're paying for? And just a little bit of discussion on that. I know one of it is UR Energy to do a, you had to do a background to be able to see if they could debt service the bonds, and I understand that. And you went to you ran it. That's different than the university. But explain a little bit about the University of Wyoming and those funds that go to them, if you would, please.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, we have a very strong and long partnership with the university. We work very closely with the Office of Research and Economic Development there. We have a number of entities that are associated with the university that are essentially the bulk of our outreach and support for existing businesses and startup entities throughout the state. It's our way that we work with entrepreneurs, companies that have opportunities to grow and expand, companies that need some help and advice in surviving, honestly. So we call it the Business Resource Network. Ben Avery's in charge of that relationship and those contracts. And so entities such as the Technology Business Center, which is the incubator over there, which is in Laramie but also has outreach functions in other parts of the state, we help fund that. We help fund the Manufacturing Works Organization, which works with manufacturing companies around the state, helping them become more efficient and be able to grow and expand. The Small Business Development Center, those are offices that work with all kinds of businesses around their abilities to grow and expand, and they work with startup companies as well, helping them understand how to do business plans, how to access financing.
I understand all that, Bob. Why not Casper, that's more centrally located in the state, if you're really helping all of our state instead of Laramie? I'm just curious why we're running it all through Laramie.
That's the administration of it. These offices are all throughout the state. They're frequently located in the same offices as our regional directors.
I know, like, we have Phil up in, Mr. Chairman, Phil's in Riverton, and Phil Christofferson, he's part of this, and they do a really good job. So this is administratively run through the university, and then they're all around the state.
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
Just an example of that. I mean, I just recently met with the guy that's now the new incubator guy, Joseph. Anyways, he's the new incubator guy up in Casper, and he hands me, and when he gives me his business card, it's a University of Wyoming card.
That's correct.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? I think we don't anticipate any callbacks. Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your key programs, agribusiness, state energy office, I mean, some of these things are reflected in your budget, but I'm not seeing those specifically. Where are they at in your budget?
They're in the main piece there. It's under the Wyoming Business Council. I think it's 1201 or something like that.
Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wallace, they're in the 0101 unit.
Okay, thank you. Okay, while
Mr.
we...
Mr. Chairman?
Okay, Representative Esquivel.
Oh, excuse me. Bob, I do want to commend you, though. You've done a pretty good job here. And I've always said Wyoming's done a good job at keeping our young men in the state of Wyoming. And I appreciate what you're doing to try and diversify our economy and keeping some of the young ladies in the state of Wyoming, because I have three daughters, as you know. And just wanted to give you a thumbs up. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, Senator Perkins.
Just one other thing, and if you could, I don't know if you have this information. I don't want you to spend a bunch of
really any significant staff time to do this, but I think it's back on page 5 or 6. You list about 7 or 8 performance measures for the Wyoming Business Council. And if you could give us, if you have some data on those performance measures that you could give to us, I think that would be helpful.
We will do that, Mr. Chairman. It's in our annual report, and I know you get reams of documents, but we'll make sure you get another copy of the annual report. Okay.
Okay. Well, we sure appreciate your presentation, the whole team, and the work you put in to get ready and all the good work you're doing for the state of Wyoming. So keep up the good work and appreciate the information. And you have all our emails. If there's something else you need to send to us, don't hesitate. So, again, thank you.
I could just make one quick comment.
Sure,
I don't
absolutely
want to be too gratuitous here. But the fact is that without the vision of this body to invest in resources that support infrastructure that builds the economy through existing businesses in the state and recruits targeted industries, we're nowhere. The other piece is that this organization is much bigger than the Business Council, and this Business Resource Network is an example of that. It's a team effort, and it doesn't exist in any other state. The collaboration between various entities that are involved with economic development and the local communities working together is unique to Wyoming. And we know that from going to national meetings where people talk about this all the time, and they're always saying, really, you can talk to your SBDC? We do that on a daily basis. So that's critically important. And then the other piece is, and we mentioned it, and it's not just about Magpul or the shooting and hunting and outdoor trades industries. It's about regulatory stability. And the reliability of the regulatory climate in this state is as important as the cost structure. And that's on you guys. So that's a good tool that we market every time we talk to somebody about why it's important for them to look at Wyoming as a place to do business. So thank you.
Mr. Chairman, one last shot, too, is, and I appreciate you, Bob, and the leadership on our international trade. And Nate's sitting in the back there, and that's something at least I'm really interested in pursuing because I think that's some markets and things we need to do. So thanks for that, and not sure which direction we're going to choose, so look forward to the continued relationship and as we develop a program for our state to market our products internationally.
Very good. Well said, Ms. Co-Chair. Okay, thank you all, and we'll take a 15-minute break, and we have tourism next. Thank you.
Thank you.
Committee, you ready? Okay, Diane, welcome. It's great to see you. Welcome to the friendly, smiling Joint Appropriations Committee. And our drill and what we'd like you to do is just kind of give us an overview from your perspective of what's going on in tourism, what's going on in our state, pretty much anything you feel like you want to talk about. We'll let you have that latitude. Committee will ask any questions at that point in time as we see fit. If you don't mind, we'll interrupt it while it's on our mind. And then once we get through that, then we'll get into the budget. What I'd like to do is kind of go through the budget page by page, and so we'll be with you and understand it. And as I look at our we have people that are designated to carry your budget on the floor. We have Representative Wallace and Senator Dockstader. And thank you for being flexible. And part of why we're doing it this way is because Senator Dockstader has to get off to the western part of the state. So we're trying to work with his schedule, and thanks for being here for that. And with that, unless the committee's got anything to say, welcome. You know the drill. Identify yourself. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Diane Schober. I'm the executive director for the Wyoming Office of Tourism. And just quickly want to introduce those who are here with us today. To my right is Anita Benton. Anita is our director of business operations. And in the audience are the members of the Wyoming Tourism Board. These are board members who are appointed by the governor of Wyoming and Senate approved. Our chairman is Renee Middleton. Our vice chairman is Sandy Newsom. And Sandy's back there. And then other members of the board, Zanny Driscoll, Lisa Anselmi Dalton, Bruce Grobetti, John Rutter, Clay Miller, Darren Rudloff, and Mark Kupke, the owner of the covered wagon where now Tesla has charging places in Lusk, Wyoming. So those are the members of the board. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll get started on the overview. So the good news is that tourism continues to be a great economic driver for the state of Wyoming. And we certainly are proud to stand alongside big industry of mining and minerals and agriculture, knowing that all of those benefit the state of Wyoming. And our partnership with private landowners is really critical in terms of sustaining product of wildlife habitats and wide open spaces and the things that people expect when they come to Wyoming for vacation. It's been a good growth economy for Wyoming, and thank you very much for the time that you all have spent supporting the investments and marketing of tourism. We handed out, it's number 132, just handed this out. If you would like to refer to that, I think that for me sometimes an illustration is easier to understand than a lot of words. But in 2005, if you look at this, we started with 2005, it will show you the number of overnight visitors, which is what the bar stands for, and across those bienniums, what our biennium budget was in each of those 2 years, and then the change is right underneath that from biennium to biennium. And then along the lower bar, the tax receipts that are generated from sales tax collections off of the travel sector. And when I say the travel sector, I mean leisure, I mean business, the reasons why people travel. And so as you look at that point in time, visitation, overnight visitation has grown from 6.9 million to 8.67 million last year, a growth of 26% from 2005 to 2012. During that same period, the travel-generated tax receipts from those 8.67 million visitors has grown by 23%, from $94 million in 2005 to $128 million in 2012. And in the middle, you can see where the our budget is, and that those are actually the dollars that are deployed through all of our marketing initiatives. $16 million in the 2005-2006 biennium, that was 44% increase over the biennium prior. In 2007 and 8, we had another nice substantial increase, which actually allowed us to begin a national campaign for the state of Wyoming. Prior to that, we were predominantly regional in our television work, and the only national advertising we had was in print. And with the launch of that national campaign, we also went into the city of Chicago and really did a major promotional effort in that market, which is the third largest market in the United States and one that really drives has the potential to drive a lot of visitation to Wyoming. And since that time, you've seen that with the Association of Marketing, we've been able to influence the growth in travel. And certainly, I know we've had discussions about Not all travel is leisure derivative. Not all travel is directly related to an ad campaign, but certainly we have the ability to influence that through marketing endeavors. And then we don't have the calendar year 13 numbers yet. We should have those shortly and before the session ends. We'll be able to share with you what the aggregate value of the travel economy meant for the state of Wyoming in 2013. And in spite of some hiccups, getting started, we had government shutdown in the fall of the year and a few other things. I still remain very optimistic that 2013 is going to be a great year for the economy of travel and Wyoming. So within our scope of work, do you have a question on any of that before we start?
Diane, on your handout, what you're saying is take 5 and 6. We spent $16. Is that that's $1 million we spent, correct?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
And so then when you say the tax-generated receipts is $94
million? $94 million, yes, Mr. Chairman.
$104, and then those will go across that way. How do you correlate and document that the tax receipts are generated by, it's just all travel. So it's anybody that's staying in a motel is traveling, is that how you're doing it?
Mr. Chairman, that is right. The economic numbers are, we contract with an economics firm out of Portland, Oregon that specializes in travel and tourism economies. They do it for several states. They collect data from the U.S. Census, the Bureau of Census. They collect data from the U.S. Department of Labor. They also collect data from the Wyoming Department of Revenue and Taxation, the Wyoming Department of Employment. And those numbers are put into what's called an M-Plan model. It's an economic forecasting model. And so then when those numbers are generated in and they look at the industry codes that are associated with travel, and there's a certain number that are defined, economic analysis here through ANI knows they look at those same NAICS codes when they identify the leisure and hospitality segments, when they send out the monthly insights that you get. So those same, they're called NAICS codes, and those same NAICS codes are associated with the leisure, hospitality, and travel economy.
So and then what they do through the some kind of a survey with motel owners, I guess, say if they have a 100-unit facility and they have, 5,000 nights that they have in a month of utilization, then they break that down based on, school buses and kids, in minerals or sales, and then tourism related. Is that how they do that? I'm just still trying to get to how you do this data.
Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate that because I think it's important, to get it as clear as possible. It's not an actual breakdown of room nights sold. What they'll do is they'll take the sales tax collections, and based on averages of average daily rates and average occupancy rates, all of those go into that economic forecasting. And so, but you are right, it is all travel. It doesn't break out to say, I'm here on my vacation and you're here for a business meeting. This represents the aggregate of travel, a large portion of which is leisure, but a large portion is also in certain areas of Wyoming. There may be more inclined for more business travel than there is leisure travel. Then there's parts of Wyoming that have a greater influence of leisure than they would for corporate travel.
A good way to really facilitate and document that these numbers make sense would be to take take an area, I don't know where it would be, maybe it'd be Sheraton, Buffalo, where you have the amount of rooms, for the 12 months, but yet you see June, July, and August, and you can see the uptick, which you could say is probably 90% travel, tourism related, and you could see some comparatives there that might show and how that would relate. It's just a thought. It's just so hard to get that data because, a lot of people are traveling anyway, and that's the number you and I've always talked about, how to get that data so a poor old engineer can understand it.
Well, Mr. Chairman, there is a breakdown that is associated specifically with the ad campaign, and I will reference that in some of the other information I'm sharing with you, and I also had shared that with you in some email mm-hmm. conversations that we had that is specifically on what's called incremental travel. Incremental travel is the amount of travel that if there will be a certain number of people who would already be traveling, and they would see a Wyoming ad. And so they might already be influenced to make a decision. And maybe the ad just pushes them to that one further step to actually book a trip. But then there's a segment of people who are interested in travel, but they weren't considering Wyoming as a vacation. And then they saw the advertising and they said, I want to look into what a vacation in Wyoming would be like. They would go to our website or start to seek other information about Wyoming. If that consumer actually converts and books a trip, so they were truly influenced by the advertising campaign, that's incremental travel. And that is a measure that is done independently of the ad agency. It's done by an independent research firm that measures incremental travel, because that really then does tell you the true test of the ad campaign.
Who hires that firm?
We do. We do the RFP, and we hire the firm independent of the ad agency, and they measure a variety of metrics. They measure the creative elements of the advertising, the impact that it caused you to actually to go to the website to start to look and seek more information on Wyoming. And so we have those measures. Visitors are also influenced by public relations. They might read a story or a travel blog that wasn't paid advertising, but maybe we supported that in another way. And so we also want to look at the full influence of travel, not just the ad campaign. And so there's that measure, which is really critical for the performance of an ad agency. And then there's also just the measure of overall travel, and is it moving with investments of marketing and influence? Are we seeing the move of travel to increase?
Senator Meyer, you got a question?
Just doing a little bit of calculation here. Back in 2005-06, we were spending about 8 cents for every dollar of taxes generated, and our high was in 910, where it was 12 cents. The budget was approximately flat, and yet we had a substantial increase, you know, in the tax receipts that were reported, you know, from 220 up to 247. And then our incremental cost, for the budget went down to 10.6 cents. So, I'm not seeing any correlation between, exhibited over the last 4 years as far as increased budgetary expenditures versus increased tax receipts generated. I know that the good senator from Fremont County wants to get a little more granular, I think, in the discussion. That's a new term that we had this year, was a granular. So anyway, we used to say just get in the weeds on some of the stuff so we know what's going on. But I think we do need to know what's going on and know that, you know, if we're spending, you know, $10 million on an ad campaign in a certain town, that we're getting $10 million back. And we know that, you know, people aren't going to forget that ad overnight, and you're going to have some lag time. And you know, it's not like an ad, if you reinforce it a little bit, that you're not going to get some residual value out of those ads. But, you know, I guess at some point in time we're going to have to look at this as a business, because we don't have the funds anymore just to have the level of spending that we used to have. So, you know, we'll have these discussions, you know, to try to determine whether or not if we're spending Wyoming taxpayers' money wisely. And thank you for the information you gave us. But I guess my question in that, Mr. Chairman, would be, you know, if we indeed find out sometime through a study that we spent $10 million in Chicago and we only got $5 million worth of taxes generated specifically by that ad, is that an effective ad? Is that an effective way to spend our money? And I guess that's the question I have to you. When do we say, yeah, it's not working? And we need to get that information back to us in a manner where we can make those type of decisions. And frankly, I think if you get that back in that manner, you'll make them for us, and we can just go on about giving you what you need to have. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Meyer, members of the committee, the information that I can share with you, which is directly related to the ad campaign, which will show, and we have a history of it for years, I have 2011 and 2012 here. I don't have the 2013 numbers. Those will be available February, right around the 1st of February. But in 2012, the ad campaign itself, and it varies in years, but we spend on average, our total media buy is about $6.5 million. So that's it, and it averages, you know, maybe a couple hundred thousand one way or the other, but that's the average spend. In 2012, that was there were 594,218 influence trips who were actually directly related to the advertising campaign. Consumers who were surveyed that did not plan a trip to Wyoming, they saw the ads, they decided to book and travel to Wyoming. So those are the influence trips. The total expenditures of those trips, $685,845,642. So the ad campaign was $6.5 million, and the expenditures for goods and services based on that was $685 million. And the tax receipts off of that $685 million was $28.1 million. That was in 2012. In 2011, it was slightly less than that. And again, we want to see growth every year. I hope that I can share with you growth in 2013. Just slightly less in 2011, the ad campaign generated 583,000 influence trips, total expenditures $651,410,000 for tax receipts of 26.7. So those are a direct measure of the incremental visitation that was generated specifically from the advertising, the paid media component. So we buy television advertising, we buy billboards, we buy out of home on city wallscapes or on like bus wraps. We have all kinds of digital through social media strategies, through search engine marketing, through banner ads on online display. So there's a variety of ways in which we're actually reaching consumers, but that's the paid media. That when we say $6.5 million, that's what that paid media is.
Go ahead, follow up, Senator Meyer.
Yeah, I guess the follow up is that do we have that information somewhere in our iPad and I haven't seen it, or is because that's the kind of information that we need to have to make the decisions to have funding for advertising and things like that. So.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Meyer, I'm happy to provide you a condensed marketing plan with the return of the investment on that. Yeah, I can get that for you. Yes.
You know, Senator Dockstetter, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Diane, appreciate it. It's well put together. We've got all of that. I'm looking at the numbers. 8.6 million overnights, resulting 3.1 million in expenditures. My problem is not all of my area feels that. One part of it says, yes, it's working well. Another part that I invited you to join us by telephone says, no, we're not picking anything up off of this. We don't feel it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the phrase Senator Meyer was looking for was granular sensitivity. That's, they're looking for up close. There you go. They want to feel something a little closer to home.
Mm-hmm.
They want to look at that and say, oh, yeah, that made a difference in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I take it home and show it to them, and they say, I didn't feel anything. And so what do we do? What do we tell them?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dockstetter, you know, it's certain parts of the state will definitely feel the impact of leisure travel more strongly than others. It depends on the availability of product. It depends on what the local areas do to grow their own tourism economy in conjunction with the state of Wyoming. One of my predecessors used to say that it was the state's responsibility to get them to the border, and it was the local community's responsibility to get them dispersed throughout the state. And that's not really how we operate. I mean, we work in partnership for a variety of things. I would guess that the folks in your area, it's probably a little bit of both. I think we're doing a lot more that impact that they may not be aware of, but there's probably a lot more that we could do. And, you know, the conversations that we've had is, I think any time a community gets ready to start with growing tourism is you have to take advantage of what you have and the folks that are coming already so that you can make sure that if you have an opportunity to extend that length of stay, can you keep them for a half an hour or a half a day or an overnight? And how do you best do that as a base? And then how do you build upon it? And, you know, we face the challenge across Wyoming is there are places that have a lot of capacity that have the opportunity for growth, and there are others that don't have as much capacity. And so they're certainly going to feel, you know, the different impacts of how the marketing efforts are affecting each and every one of the communities and across Wyoming. But we're certainly here to share in that, to help them, to do what we can.
One of the things that you could help when you do this for us, you talked about incremental increases in visits. And, you know, the thing about it is how you get the data. So are you telling me that when a person comes to Riverton and stays in the motel, there's some way to ascertain from that individual that he wasn't planning on coming to Wyoming, but he saw an ad, and now he shows up in Riverton? And you can have a way of tracking that? Explain how you do that.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, we don't do that. Now, there are the Fremont County Lodging Tax Board has done what they call intercept surveys. So they actually have done some of that work, so we know what some of their data is. What I'm reporting back to you are done through national samples. They're online samples. And the
Wait a minute. Online samples. Explain what that means.
Mr. Chairman, the online sample would be 10,000 names that are in a database, in a national database, that have said, we are traveling, we are travelers. And so then they are shown.
How do they get their name in a national database that they're traveling?
Mr.
Because they bought an airline ticket, or how do they do that?
Mr. Chairman, there are national firms that gather sample groups together for a variety of industry sectors. So there, you know, a lot of consumer products, and we'll have firms that will go out and gather data samples. So what this company that we hire is the company out of Indianapolis, Strategic Marketing and Research Incorporated. So they'll go online through all of the cities where we run advertising. So they'll go into St. Louis and to Omaha and into Chicago and Portland and Denver and Salt Lake. And so there'll be a series of questions that they'll go in. So they'll ask, and we also gather names from our website. People
so
who
you
come
go online, but who do you direct? When you go online, you have to have people out there. How do you find the names of who people that you're going to ask these questions of?
That's what those national companies do, is they gather the names of travelers from sites, from consumer sites, from consumer products, and ask people to agree to go into a survey pool. We also blend this so that it's not just the national sampling. It's blended with people who have been to the Wyoming website. So we're gathering names there. So they'll have to garner a size that's statistically significant. That usually is right around 10,000. And they'll ask them, would you agree to be in a survey about travel for the summer? The consumer says, yes, I would. From there, then they develop their sample size, and there's a series of questions. And in advertising measures, there's a series that go out when the ads are running. And those are done like every other week. So we're measuring recall. Did you, you know, what have you seen? And so they're saying, yes, I saw it. And then they go back in the fall to the same sample group that they used in the beginning and say, did you actually book travel from those ads that you saw? So that's how they're measuring. Yes, I saw the ads. No, I didn't know about Wyoming. And then they're going back and they're saying, yes, we booked a trip.
So
this is what we did.
So what you're saying is that this survey firm you hired can document that they've contacted 565,000 travel days of people that have said they made the conscious decision to come to Wyoming. So I could go in there and pick out one of those people, and I could make a phone call and ask them, and they would say what you just told me, correct?
Mr. Bebout, or Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, yes, that is the, I mean, that's essentially.
Have you done that to follow up?
I have not. I have not, no.
Sample one or two of them just to make a phone call?
No, I've not done that. I have not. They are a company that specializes in this. They're, you know, a reputable company. We run credentials on companies when they respond to an RFP for our research to assure that the state's getting what we're asking for, that they can deliver, that it's deliverable, that it's done independently, that it's done with an unbiased. And so it's the research is done on that response that they are qualified research analysts.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I might add one other thing, too, just so for the sake of the committee. We also have worked with the A&I Department of Economic Analysis to look at all of those survey samplings and the questionnaires and the research that we do. Because I know that I look at those insights that come out, and I want to be sure that those are tracking in the same ways? Are there any things that would raise up to someone who's doing analysis for all of you from the state that they would see with our own independent research? Is there anything that they would say maybe they need to look at something else in terms of variables? So we're asking a variety of experts to sit with us and review that research.
So. Continue, please.
Okay. So then the standard portion of the narrative really just gives you...
Before you get into the budget, are there any other questions, committee, in general about anything that Diane's talked about? Any questions? Okay, now let's get into the budget.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, so in the standard narrative, the unique thing that the Wyoming Office of Tourism is able to do is we're the only statewide organization dedicated to growing Wyoming's tourism economy. And it is our responsibility through creating and managing advertising and marketing efforts that we assure that Wyoming remains the only true West experience. And the brand that we've been marketing under is Forever West. It really embodies all of the attributes that we as citizens love and appreciate about the state of Wyoming, and it certainly resonates with visitors from across the country and around the world. The primary 50% of our budget is spent in paid media advertising. I shared that with you briefly in the earlier conversation. The ad campaign is predominantly centered around summer visitation. That's when the entire state is open and available for visitors. We have limited capacity in winter, although we do spend about $500,000 growing the winter opportunities in the state of Wyoming. Now, we're fortunate that we have a national campaign. It'll start in a month at the end of February, and the national campaign will run through the 1st of June. We'll be in markets like Chicago, Minneapolis, Milwaukee, Madison, St. Louis, Kansas City, Oklahoma City, Omaha, Portland, and then in June that national campaign will wind down and we'll start our adjacent market campaign, which will be in Denver and Salt Lake, Boise, Bozeman, Butte, Billings, Rapid City, all of the markets that are right around Wyoming, driving a more short-term visitation. In addition to a very robust advertising campaign, we also have a very aggressive public relations and media campaign. We spend a lot of time and effort with journalists and travel writers from around the United States and around the world to come here and write stories or create blogs or create films, documentaries or short stories or any kinds of messaging about the state of Wyoming. And I know a lot of you have seen some of those great results. They've been in newspapers from the New York Times to the Arizona Journal to the Denver Post. We've had television crews from Russia, from France, from Mexico. We have tour operators. We spend a big portion of our budget, about $1 million of our budget on trade, dealing with receptive operators and wholesalers and travel agents to also come in and sell the product for us. So with the layered marketing approach of paid media advertising for consumers and a robust public relations endeavor, and then the effort with the travel trade, we're able to influence travel for leisure for the state of Wyoming. And certainly I know each of you in your own communities, feel different impacts of that from visitors coming and taking advantage of all that we have to see and do in Wyoming.
Senator Haster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Diane, give me an idea how you select the cities for your advertising. I mean, some of it can make sense to me as far as, some of the regional ones that you talked about, like in Boise and Salt Lake and Denver. But when you get out to St. Louis and Chicago and some of those other places, what drives you to those communities, and do you rotate it around the country?
Mr. Chairman. And Senator Haster, the selection of markets there's several things that go into it. There's a marketing measure called the Brand Development Index, and it's a measure of if a market already has an awareness about Wyoming. If there's been some public relations efforts there, that might raise the awareness, and then your paid marketing dollars don't have to work as hard, so you can get greater lift from those. We also, through online metrics, through Google Analytics, you can track all of your traffic to your website, who's following you through search, how you're generating visitation from search engine marketing efforts. And so then you take those analytics and put them in and say, what markets rate the highest? And the markets that rate the highest are the ones where your marketing dollars can do the best work. But then there's also a point where you can look at a market and say, now the ratings are going up, up, up. We can take maybe some of that money off and we'll invest it in another market that shows some potential. Or maybe we want to beef up a market to just expand our footprint. A market like Chicago is a very lucrative market in that it returns visitation, but it also is competitive. Montana's there. Colorado's there. You know, they also see the value in that market. And so there might be times when we would say, Kansas City is showing a really high rating. We could pull $20,000 from a Kansas City investment and put it back into Chicago. But it's all based on the analytics and visits to the website and the measure of awareness in those markets. And there are markets, like a market like Los Angeles has a very high awareness of Wyoming, and it's got a great population, but it's so expensive that we would need another $10 million just to do that market, to do it justice. And so that's not a market that would be a good business investment for the state of Wyoming. And so we evaluate those, and we do change. We have consolidated markets. As I said, when I started 10 years ago, we only had regional television in Denver and Salt Lake. And then through investments that you all as a body have made in tourism marketing, we've been able to expand that Wyoming footprint into other national markets.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
And then you are kind of keeping track of the upcoming eclipse coming up, and I think,
yeah.
I think yeah. 2017.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman and Senator Hassert, we actually had a scientist from the University of Wyoming who tracks eclipses. And Wyoming, the good news, if you don't know, there's going to be a fabulous path of the best viewing of the eclipse that comes right through Wyoming in July of 2017. And Senator Hassert's been sharing information with me on it. So we'll use it as another way to draw people in. They can see the eclipse.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Stepson.
Mr. Chairman and Diane, following up on, you know, in addition to sort of geographic areas of marketing, do you market different types of tourism, like, you know, whether it be adventure tourism or family tourism or historical tourism? And if you do so, if you kind of market to those subgroups, are there any emerging groups that you're focusing on?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Stepson, the brand building that we do in major markets is about the emotional connection to the place and the experience. And we do analysis on the demographics, but now it really is much more about psychographics and what people enjoy. So an adventure traveler is no longer just a young male. In fact, a 47-year-old single female is the truest definition of an adventure traveler on the demographics of it. And so a lot of the old things that you analyzed on consumers, now you're looking at stronger aggregates of those. We do, in the national markets, it's brand building. We have to get people thinking Wyoming first against Montana or Colorado. And then as they come into the portals and the platforms like the website or onto a social media platform or if they read a story, then we start to talk about the more experiential things, and it does break down more then onto specific things that people might enjoy. The strongest market that's been in tourism, not just for Wyoming but for America, has been baby boomers. And as they're aging, there's another group that's coming in, and it's the 45 to 50-year-olds, but they're very independent. The group travel segment is no longer what it used to be, so we have to tailor. It's more about the activities and the experience as it is about what's said in the ads. But the measure of the ads from the emotional connection still resonates very high in terms of performance. So we haven't had to shift advertising and the messaging at this point. Markets that would be emerging are, the Gen X, Gen Y, and they're a very fickle group. They're very different, and to reach them in media is why the explosion of all of the different channels that we have through social media, Television today isn't just television on network television. It's on Netflix. It's on Hulu. It's on satellite television. I mean, there's just a variety of ways that we will have to be able to reach those other consumers.
Senator Perkins.
I'm just wondering, I mean, you're tracking everything else. Did you track, were you able to track anything when, I think Modern Family a year or so ago had their episode in Jackson, I think, and
yep.
I mean, did you try? Was there any fallout from that episode that you know of?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Perkins, yeah, Modern Family TV show that's on ABC, very popular. They shot their second season pilot in Wyoming and Jackson. I don't have the numbers with me today, but the traffic to our website that week that premiered were astronomical. We just had a lot of extra traffic, and we also ran some special promotions on social media with online, you know, Modern Family, create your own Modern Family moment in Wyoming. And we had some really great traffic that and response and engagement that generated from that.
You know, one of the things about, and I just pulled up your website, you know, when you look at the number of hits, do you track, you know, you can't tell where the requests come from, but on the hits to your website, have you noticed when you go into a market area and you have a big spend, a big media buy, that the hits go up on your website? Have you seen anything like that? And the other thing, while I'm talking about that, it says take the survey. How many people take the survey off of our website? You should have that information available. I'm curious, is it 5,000, 50,000, 500,000? How many people actually? To me, when I see it on television or read it in a magazine, what I do, well, I'll go to something on the Internet to try to find more specific. So if I saw something about Wyoming, I would go to Wyoming Tourism like I just did. So you should be able to see a big uptick in your website because of the media buys in certain areas, not because you know they come from that, just in general. Have you done that?
Senator Thiebaut, Mr. Chairman, yes. And the good news is it you see it, the spikes in inquiries.
Can you just share that with us when you have something?
I will. We break it down on a weekly basis. And the good news is from 2012 to 2013, our inquiries to our website and to our film, you know, our kids' site, the collective inquiries, were up 25%. Over 2012. So 2013, there was a lot more interest. We also look at the number of unique visitors that come to the site so that it's not you coming back several times. It's you coming once and we're measuring you. So we have that information. I'm glad to share that with you. I'll break it down on the seasonality of some of the campaigns.
Yeah, and I'm just curious about big numbers. And
yep.
If you have a big media buy and then show the week before and then the next couple of weeks, not a lot of information, but just give me an idea.
Okay.
And how many hits, like, would you get today on your website? Take a typical day.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure on the daily basis. I know that we had over, it was right at 2 million on the year. So, you know, then that obviously when campaigns are running, it's much higher than when we don't have a campaign running. What we're able to do now, though, is we invest in search engine marketing year-round. So that is that's at least a presence for Wyoming in the marketplace as consumers are online and you're doing Google searches and a variety of things. There's always we're paying to have the Wyoming URL be one of the top returns on that. So we do have a year-round measure there. On the survey, your question on the survey, that is set up. It's not always on the site. We pull it down sometimes, and then we'll put it back up. But it's there for people who are repeat visitors, and then we'll ask them if they've been, like if they go three pages in, would you be willing to take a survey at the end of your experience on the website? And a lot of those names that say yes go into part of the research that I referenced earlier when we're asking about visitation and influence of the messaging. That's where a lot of those names are collected is through that survey. And then we also ask them questions about the usability of the site and some other things. I'll get you the number on how many we run in a year, but it's done on an incremental basis.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anything else, committee? Continue. Oh, Senator Perkins.
Mr. Chairman, I know it's one of the vendors that compiles the numbers about the amount of revenue that's generated from the advertising. I just wanted to, do you know how they calculate, how do they figure out how much is spent from a visit and I guess that would be the first question is, how do they do that, if you know?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Perkins, they actually ask. That's part of the, when they're surveying those, they'll ask them, what did you do while you were on your trip? They'll ask them all kinds of things, like what was the size of your party? Did you have children under 18? They'll ask them a lot of those bits of information to go back to what Representative Stubson had asked, like what's the profile of the visitor, so that we can make some marketing decisions with that included. But they will also ask them for trip expenditures and estimated based on accommodations, based on transportation, shopping, food, and beverage. And so it's all done through that survey gathering.
And so then from that sample, then you extrapolate across the known visit?
And Mr. Chairman, yes, that's correct, Senator Perkins.
Okay.
May I continue? Okay. So in essence, the work that we're doing is about driving visitation. Tourism is considered an export economy. It's predominantly non-residents who are coming here and buying goods and services from Wyoming businesses, and in turn generating sales tax revenues, which are contributors to state and local economies, which I know you understand. But that's the purpose of growing a tourism economy, is to enhance the revenues and the sales tax collections from this particular industry. And we certainly, it's not only fun because you get to take the very best that Wyoming has to offer and put it out there for the rest of the world to see, but we take this very seriously. You know, this is a business. This is important, and it is something that we can help to grow diversification in Wyoming's economy. And I think that it's also important to note that the tourism economy represents a little over 30,000 jobs, full-time equivalents. And even though some of those jobs may be entry-level jobs, there are a lot of students who are getting, their income to further their education, whether it be at a community college or at the University of Wyoming, who are working in the tourism sector all the way to business owners and CEOs. So it can be a strong career path for anyone who's interested in working with individuals and visitors, but it also is a way to help contribute to the middle class and to grow education. In addition to those services, we have services that we do in-state. We do run welcome centers, and I know many of you have had a chance to go out and see the newest welcome center at High Plains Exit here in Cheyenne, and so that's the essence of what we're doing in tourism. Advertising based on solid strategic research, and then growing the consumer campaign and working with travel trade and public relations and media. Any questions on the base of what we're doing?
Maybe. Okay, please continue.
Okay, so Mr. Chairman, then I'll start on page 11 of our budget with priority number one, sustaining markets and market share, if you'd like me to.
Please.
Okay. In 2008, when the United States started facing a financial fallout, we came to the legislature and asked in that supplemental session for additional monies to expand the Wyoming footprint. And the legislature gave the Office of Tourism appropriated about $1 million for additional advertising in that year to assure that while many states and destinations were pulling back on their advertising, that Wyoming would still be strong and present in front of consumers as they were considering their vacations. We knew that there would be a change in how the American people would travel, but that there still would be Americans who would be traveling. And we wanted to be sure that we got the fair share of those travelers considering Wyoming and then booking a trip to Wyoming. Since that time, we have come back as an agency and asked for this appropriation to be included as part of our standard budget. And it has been the direction of this body and the legislature that be one-time funding associated with every biennium. So in the first sustaining markets and market share, we are asking you for $2.4 million on the biennium for sustaining and maintaining what we currently have in the marketplace. This has been this is part of that $6.5 million per year, or $13 million on an advertising buy on the biennium. This $2.4 million have been part of that. To not have that, for you to understand what's at stake, that represents about 45% of our television and out of home. And so that's a substantial brand building mechanism. And we would lose market share and we would lose the ability to drive visitation if this were not provided in the budget. So we would ask strongly that you give consideration to allowing us to deepen and sustain this market share with the $2.4 million. We are also asking for inflationary coverage on broadcast media only, and that represents $300,000. That is on the television buy only. And in today's world, when you we have what's called trafficking. It's where you go in and you audit, and you make sure that when you place a television media buy that you actually got all of the spots that they were placed when they said they were going to be placed, that if you bought 150 spots on NBC in Chicago, that you got 150 spots on NBC in Chicago. Well, with high definition and a variety of other outlets, the cost of trafficking has grown substantially. Now, there's been inflation across all media, but we've really seen it in the broadcast area. So we're asking that you would consider that so that we don't lose the ability to actually have the message in the marketplace. Every time your overhead increases, that erodes your ability to have a message in the marketplace. So we are asking for $2.7 million to continue with the existing markets as we have been doing so that we can continue to provide the kind of visitation and growing the tourism economy for the state of Wyoming.
Yeah, Diane, what you've done is every year you've had your standard budget of $23 million, $24 million, and you've had one time for this 2.4, and what you're asking is to continue that. And I don't, are you asking that to become part of the standard budget? I don't believe you are.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the governor's recommendation is that this be continued as one-time funding. So we would ask that you would consider that as well as one-time funding.
Any other? Senator Meyer.
Yeah. Diane, do you guys ever try any advertising on either satellite dish or DirecTV? You know, folks out in the country, they don't get the a lot of this stuff, you know, but boy, the History Channel is, you know, that's a good one. You might get some legs on that one. I don't know. Have you approached that at all, or asked your ad people to?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Meyer, we have not, and the reasons why is the cost of it is higher than other forms of television, but it certainly is always a consideration as we look at all media platforms. And your comment about the History Channel, we almost always, every year, the History Channel magazine is part of our print buy because it is. It's a good audience for Wyoming. So.
Go ahead, Senator Meyer, and then we'll get to Senator Perkins.
I was down in San Antonio one time in a hotel on their information thing. Right after you saw the information about the hotel and everything, they went to an infomercial about, gosh, I can't remember where it was, but it was about a 20-minute spot in the hotel, and there wasn't any place in Texas, but another state had made a purchase in that hotel chain where they had hotel rooms, you know, in that other state, and they were driving, you know, their business within their chain. And I didn't know whether or not you'd contacted any hotel chains to where, you know, you could work with them, give them the product, and that would drive them, you know, their people that stay with them down the road to the next hotel.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Meyer, we've not done that specifically, but we are always looking at other avenues, and we can certainly see what that might look at. I don't know what the if it's too narrow and it wouldn't be broad enough with, you know, you're sometimes with when you look at the budgets in markets, you have to go with bigger things where more millions can see the ads, like an out of home versus the volume of what might be in a specific hotel chain. Yeah. But we could certainly look at it.
Senator Meyer?
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's something you could team up with the film industry people. If they've got a, you know, 10 to 20-minute spot, you know, it's not going to cost you anything. You just make it available to the other hotel chains that are in Wyoming, and they can put it in, you know, in their informational slot. And and it probably won't cost you anything. They'd be glad to have the content so they can sell rooms in Wyoming.
And Mr. Chairman and Senator Meyer, I will tell you your reference to teaming up with film production companies that do that type of work is definitely an initiative that we're working on. So you may be seeing some things like that come out of our endeavors.
Senator Perkins.
Mr. Chairman, so anyway, I wanted to know, I mean, we talked about the $2.4 million, and then the governor's recommendation was to approve that request, but then he also asked for another $1.8 million, and between Diane or our good budget director over there, I just wondered, that I didn't see any background for that in the narrative.
Brett, do you want to take a shot at that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, I believe there was some additional information that was provided by the agency for additional ideas for funding should the governor be inclined that way, and the director may have a little bit more information about these specific items that she provided to the governor for his consideration.
Go ahead, Diane.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, members of the committee, yes, Governor Meade did, we had visited with him about several initiatives that we felt were really strong for not only sustaining where we are today in terms of tourism impacts on Wyoming's economy, but how to really grow that. How do we move the meter to actually draw more visitors here, increase their expenditures, increase the tax revenues from those visitors? And one way that you can grow the economy is by going into major markets. And the major markets are good because they have a strong center of the population. And we had requested the money to go into Seattle and open Seattle with television and out-of-home and a public relations endeavor. And the reason why we chose Seattle was for several reasons, many of which I had discussed with Senator Hassert's question about how you evaluate a market. There's a presence in Seattle for Wyoming through print, through online, through search. There's an awareness there. We feel like we could actually really grow visitation from that market with the more bigger, bolder means of television and out of home. It worked in Chicago and it's worked in Portland. The number of households in Seattle would grow if we could go there with television. We would actually have 16% of all U.S. households. So that would actually increase our number of households by about a little less than 4% to go into the Seattle market. There's also, so that market would be a good lucrative market for tourism. But I think in conversations around some of the other things that would be a side note from that market, there's a lot of interest in Wyoming from Seattle for other industries as well, whether they are, around the exports and the opportunity to have Wyoming coal be exported there. This is another way of bringing a positive association with Wyoming and getting Washington visitors to come here to our state to see what we have. That wouldn't be the purpose of going into Seattle, but it would be a side benefit of a market like Seattle, where you could have – you're just increasing that association in a positive way with the residents of the state of Washington with the state of Wyoming. So the request is for $1.5 million on the biennium to expand our television, out-of-home, and public relations efforts within Seattle. And we know that Seattle is the market of opportunity over Dallas. Dallas is really close right there. But just all of the indicators on the analytics for visitation to our website, for the brand development index, and for when you're tracking aggregates of how people move throughout the Internet, they're the types of sites that those who have that are coming out of the Washington market fit the role of where all of our other visitors are going and are sourcing from. So we know that there's great propensity to return that. That's $1.5 million. The second component that Governor Meade is recommending is international expansion, and that's $360,000 in international expansion. The breakdown of that international on the $360,000 on the biennium is $100,000 for the United Kingdom, $55,000 for Canada, and $25,000 for Taiwan. The $100,000 for the United Kingdom and for Canada are to match with Brand USA. Brand USA is the United States tourism marketing effort. So when you can put $100,000 against an ad campaign that they're buying for the United States, they'll match our money. So we would actually get $200,000 worth of advertising in that market. And there's already campaigns that are running in UK. You don't have to have the language translation. So that $100,000 would actually be $200,000 in value for us. Canada is a market that is as broad and diverse as the United States is. I mean, to really go into Canada with a consumer campaign, you'd need about a $7 to $8 million budget to be able to push Canada from a consumer standpoint. So we still focus Canada on trade, people who are doing package travel. And again, it's not bus tours like we knew in, you know, days of our parents, but it's about the independent traveler who wants the convenience of a package travel option. And so there is a Brand USA also, while they're running their consumer campaign in Canada, we can tie in with travel agents and operators in Canada on a one-to-one match and push the Wyoming product through Canada. So that will allow us to leverage that market even greater. So Canada is by far the largest international visitation that we have in Wyoming, and then the United Kingdom follows from overseas travel. So those two markets are very lucrative for us. In Taiwan, we're interested in taking the trade work that has been done there and expanding that. I traveled to Taiwan with Governor Mead in October. And in November of 2012, Taiwan was added to the visa waiver program, meaning that consumers, the Taiwanese people, can travel to the United States without getting a visa, which essentially opened the door for leisure travel from the Taiwanese coming into the United States. There's been a long interest in Wyoming, in Taiwan, and we've seen visitation in groups and for education and other purposes. We feel like there's great opportunity to expand that market with just a little bit of nurturing and a stronger presence from a rep there. So that's what the $25,000 is. So in addition to the $2.7, $1.5 to open Seattle, $360,000 for international expansion.
You meant $1.5 million,
but $1.5 million, yes.
The question I would have on this, you know, who knows if this is going to survive or what's going to happen with all these budgets, but if it should survive, my question to you before I would even consider supporting it, if I was the governor, would be, show me, you say there's a 4% market that you think you can penetrate in Seattle. That's what you just said a little bit ago.
Yes.
So translate 4% market share in Seattle, or you get that many people looking at it, to how much on your chart we'll see as a direct result of spending $1.5 million. So what is that number, and how do you come up with a correlation between what you expect to get from that relative to that 4%? And that's a number I would ask for you to – I'm sure – I don't know if you've calculated that or you just got a warm, fuzzy feeling that let's go get it and there's 4% we can get. You ought to be able to quantify that and say with 4% we're going to get this many and this many hits and – so you should see a substantial increase in your visitation.
Mr. Chairman, we'll use, and I have it. I don't have it with me today, but I will get it to you, the same analytics and then post-performance that we use for Chicago and Portland, because we did the same type of thing there. We were not in those markets.
Did you
we
do it those... before Chicago?
Yeah, we knew.
And you showed what it was, and you could show that, okay, we spent $2 million in the Chicago media buys, and all of a sudden we went from here to here. You can show that? Okay, then that's what I'd like to
see. Mr. Chairman, we have measures of growth from those markets, and I will get you metrics that would be a correlation to Seattle.
Pretty much?
No, it'll be a little bit different than that.
Okay. Okay, please continue.
Okay. So within, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, within our exception request number one was to deepen and expand markets, keeping the existing $2.4 million that we've had since 2009 as a one-time appropriation. $300,000 for inflation, $1.5 million for the expansion of Seattle, $360,000 for international expansion. And then the last item in our request is for two seasonal employees to be housed at the Welcome Center here in Cheyenne, or excuse me, south of Cheyenne, the Southeast Wyoming Welcome Center. The good news was when we opened a year ago in September, we anticipated that we would be running with an increase over where our prior location was, and we anticipated that with our staff being co-located there and the number of seasonals that we have allocated, we have a full-time and a part-time and then two seasonals that are already associated there, that we would have enough staff to cover the visitation. And the good news is that the visitation was so phenomenal through the summer months. There was at one point, we were up 184% over visitation in the same week at our prior location, which was at College Drive. An example, the week of Cheyenne Frontier Days. In our old location, on an average, we would have anywhere right around 2,000 to 2,300 people in a week. This year, in 2013, during the week of Cheyenne Frontier Days, we had over 11,000 visitors in our Welcome Center in 1 week. And, you know, that the reason why we wanted to relocate a Welcome Center was high visibility and easy accessibility to the traveling public, and it worked. We don't count the people who just come in to use the restrooms in the rest area. We only count the people who are coming into the actual Welcome Center. And we're unable to service all of the guests. We've run out of state parks brochures. We're dispersing people more broadly through state parks. They're going through the exhibits. They want to know, where can I see this? Where on the map is something that you would find, like the big woolly mammoth display that we have, or where can I climb rocks, like at Vita Vu? And so we want to be able to add two seasonal employees. Those are 5 month positions. They run from April through the end of September. The value of that on the biennium is $79,000. So it breaks down to roughly a little less than $40,000 on a year, and that's two people. We tried this year by supplementing them with going to a temp service. And what happened to us is the temp service employees are people who are looking for another job. So we'd get them, we'd get them trained, and a week or 10 days later or 2 weeks later, they'd move on to something else. And the people that we're looking for that work best for us in our welcome centers are students and retired folks. And they're not at temp services looking for work. And so it is in Governor Mead's recommendation for these two seasonal positions and for the funding. And we would ask that you would consider that so that we can continue to service the traveling public through the Southeast Wyoming Welcome Center.
Any questions on that committee,
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Perkins, and then we'll get Representative Wallace.
I appreciate the narrative. The question I have, Mr. Chairman, is with respect to the funding. I note that we've got employee benefits plus employer health insurance and even retirees insurance on these seasonal part-time. And I'm just wondering, is that really so that they would be eligible and included in the retirement and health plans for the state, even though they're seasonal part-time?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Perkins, I am going to, if I may, refer to Anita and or Mr. Jones. The numbers are calculated for us based on what we needed. And so do you have the answer to that? Or Mr. Jones, can you answer that more thoroughly for them? Sorry, Brett.
Mr. Jones, you threw us for a minute there. It's been so much breath.
Yeah. Can you
Mr.
explain
Jones,
how
Jones, sir, can you answer that one?
I know he's
Mr. Chairman, I think Mr. Jones resides somewhere in eastern South Dakota. It's typically my father. But, Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, specifically with part-time employees, there is a threshold for which they become eligible for additional benefits outside of typical payroll taxes and things of that nature. I don't have that right off the top of my head, but I'd be happy to provide you that information so that you would have an understanding of what triggers that with respect to a part-time or seasonal employee.
Okay. Anything else? Oh, yeah. Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And that was actually one of my questions, so thank you for that. My other question is maybe a little bit off track, but I'm wondering if you have room in your budget somewhere else to, like, build a real welcome sign. I've been by there several times recently, and there's this kind of banner thing that's sort of windblown, and I don't know.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Wallace, I don't know how recently you were there, because the shredded one did go down, and there's a new banner up. But there's money still in the construction budget for a permanent sign. And it's being designed, and it will go on the south end of the property. But we didn't have anything there when we opened. And we went, and last spring, we said, we've got to do something. I was before the Joint Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources Committee, and a couple of the committee members said, you know, where's the sign? We put the sign up, and immediately the next week, we saw our visitation increase in double digits. And so really, you know, it's your point is well taken, and it will be permanently resolved, hopefully in a very tasteful way soon, before the summer visitor season starts.
Representative Escobar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Diane, when you moved out there, why did you leave the two statues behind, or who owns those? Is it the state? Why
I don't know what statues you're talking about, but explain, please.
The Indian and the Trapper statues?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman.
Nobody knows about them because you can't see them.
And Representative Escobar, there were two statues that were donated to the state of Wyoming at the prior location at College Drive. And they are on the northeast corner of that location. To relocate a statue is several thousands, like almost $100,000 a statue for relocation. The roundabout they're on a base, and you know the movement. The property is still owned by the state of Wyoming. The property where we were co-located. The Department of Transportation is planning use for that particular facility. And because it will still have public access, it was determined that those statues would remain there rather than the expense of moving them.
Just to follow up,
go ahead,
Mr. Chairman. If the statues were, say we got a arts grant or something, or cultural trust fund grant, or even if this committee decided that they were better, would be better, they'd be more visible there. Where over there would you prefer them to be?
Where do you want your statues, Diane?
Mr. Chairman and Representative,
and
well,
maybe
I don't
we could
know
make
that they
these your
to
full-time two employees too.
Those statues do not belong to the Office of Tourism. They're not on our inventory of any assets. And I do know there's been some inquiry about the statues, which the Department of Transportation has been fielding. And so I'm not sure what the status is with the Department of Transportation and those particular statues.
Well, why don't we find out who owns them, and let's see what it might be, and if there's a desire to move those things. If it's $100,000, I mean, that's got to be an incredibly big statue for $100,000.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, they are. They're huge. They're on a base that's probably as big as
this. Huge? Is it as high as the ceiling?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. The base is bigger than this desk. And then they're up, and there are two.
Okay.
So they're quite large.
Okay.
Yeah, there's...
Mm-hmm. Okay, anything else, Representative Escobar?
Polishing statues.
Senator Perkins.
I was just wondering, last time I was in the visitor center, it was Monday... No, it was probably Thursday morning at about 10 o'clock or between 9:30 and 10. And I was on my way to Denver, and I stopped in there. And I bet there was between 50 and 60 people wandering through there, like saying on October Thursday morning at 10 o'clock. Is that pretty normal? I mean, I was shocked at the number of people that were in there.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Perkins, I mean, it really surprised us as well. There have been – the good news about it is there's – you know, we get a lot of school groups that are traveling through who will stop in, or even here locally or regionally. They make that part of their stop of their excursion. But the traveling public really is interested in, you know, what's available. The other thing that has been really nice is all of the military buses that are bringing up folks for training at Camp Guernsey now stop there, and our staff has taken up a volunteer – snack pack, so we volunteer and have these packages of like jerky and different things to give to all these guardsmen who are coming and training at Camp Guernsey. I mean, there's just been a whole association with the traveling public that we couldn't accommodate at our other location. When motor coaches would come, they would park at McDonald's, and all the people would unload at McDonald's and go in and eat, and the tour director would walk down to our facility and get information. then go back up, and then she would put it, when the people came back on the coach, he or she would share. And today what they can do is they can park, and all of those visitors can come in. And so they're gathering information, and they're talking about when their families or others are going to do this, that even things that are outside of maybe that particular trip that they're on. So it is, I'm really pleased to share with you that it's serving the purpose of what it was designed to do. And one thing I might add, too, just so you know, in the summer months from May through September, we're open 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, 7 to 7, so to accommodate the traveling public. So the hours of, you know, you have to have more staff in order to accommodate all of those hours and assure that people have their time off and what they need.
Mr. Chairman.
President Nicholas.
What I might suggest is even where that facility is located, you have to kind of come around the bend, and all of a sudden it's just immediately upon you. And so if the sign is around the bend, then you're not going to see it before it's almost too late to hit the brakes and slow down. We could put a sign in the highway right away, not too far from the Welcome to Wyoming sign that says in 1.2 miles is the Wyoming Welcome Center, and then you've got a reminder or just a heads up before you get there, and that wouldn't cost anything because it would be an exit sign that we could have the highway department put in there. But you need another reminder before you get to it because it comes up so quickly.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Nicholas, I'm always great when DOT will provide signage for us, so I like the idea. But there are two signs now after the Welcome to Wyoming, those big blue signs. There's one that's, I think it's about a mile and a half in, and then there's another one as you go up the incline. And then if we will have our sign that'll be on the south part of the property, which it will be visible from right as you get to that bridge. So the sign that we have now, the temporary vinyl sign, is, I agree with you, it's way too close to where the exit is. Yeah.
Okay, any other questions? What about the travels, the visitor center up in Beulah? How's that going? Is that something you own, or is that YDOT?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the Department of Transportation actually owns the asset itself, and we provide the visitor services that are there. It's open 12 months out of the year. You know, we see, you know, the substantial volume of business in the summertime, and we saw an increase of about, I'll have to look to be sure, but it was right around 10 to 14% growth year over year for that particular facility. We're exploring signage in South Dakota in partnership with some other visitor councils in Wyoming to increase the, you know, Welcome Center to Wyoming exit 198. But it's doing well. And in the winter season, we utilize the staff there for all of our data cleansing and social media postings. And so there, you know, today you can have people work. They don't have to be right in the office in Cheyenne and still support the marketing efforts. So it's working well. And thank you for that investment. If you have not been there to see that one, you should go and take a look. It's really a nice facility as well.
Beulah, that's up in northeastern Wyoming. Yeah.
It's
had a steak there.
Yeah, it's right down the road from the Buffalo Jump Saloon, so where the steakhouse is, and in a really beautiful part of Wyoming in Crook County.
Okay, any other questions? The one thing I have, and I've looked at your 900 series, and you know your budget has one of the largest 900 series percentage-wise than any other budget in state government. And you know, and I know a big part of it's your Barnhart Communications contract, and then there's a lot of media buys, but there's a lot of incidentals, and I don't know what kind of a thought process, how you decide where to spend it. Maybe you could break down into like three categories that would probably be for your 900 series, you know, your big travel agency firm, your media buys, and then et al. And then tell me provide to me a little bit about how you decide to spend money on the northwestern Wyoming shoot instead of the eastern Wyoming shoot. I mean, I'm just trying to get a handle how you spend and how much you spend in these other areas. And maybe it's the board that makes the decision. So just help me out there with some information, would you please?
Yes, I will provide a summary of what that is for you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, as a follow-up to that?
Yeah, Senator Dockstader.
Thank you. Could we understand why their agency of record, why they get the open checkbook? Just work that all into us, because it's amazing the deal they have.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Dockstetter, the it is a large contract, and it's not uncommon that we receive a lot of questions about it from the industry to you know, who are appropriating the funds for the work. It is set up on an RFP, so we write an RFP for ad agency services. And in this particular selection process, we chose to put all services under one contract. So just for the efficiencies of what we wanted to do. Every year, throughout the year, there are benchmarks that the agency has to provide and has to meet in order to consider it a successful deliverable for the state of Wyoming. We, by the procurement office, can go as far as 7 years before we re-RFP it. It doesn't mean that we would wait 7 years. The contract is actually renewed on an annual basis with the approval of the Wyoming Tourism Board. So the members who are sitting here today are reviewing that with us based on the metrics and the benchmarks and the evaluation of the work that the ad agency is doing. The contract, the total contract for the agency is roughly this year $7.2 million. So $6.5 million is really pass-through money. They're buying a print ad in National Geographic Traveler. And they're paying, we approve the media buy. We look at it and we say, yes, we approve this media buy. And then we sign an authorization that they can go out to start to bid on different elements to see where they can get the best prices. Then that comes to us as this is the overall plan. You've approved it. We're going forward with the media buy. Barnhart executes the buy, and then we reimburse them for the placement. So they are actually passing that money. We're paying them for what they've already paid out to the media outlet. We don't pay them until it's already been confirmed and run and audited. So everything is audited on it. The other roughly $700,000 that would be on this year's contract or any given year's contract would include the agency compensation and then production for them to produce a print ad or a television spot or other pieces of agency work that we would have them do. The rule of thumb for advertising agencies is about some agencies would be compensated based on commission, based on the volume of the media buy that they placed. So the more the media buy that they placed, the higher the compensation would be. Ours is on a flat retainer. So whether they buy $6.5 million worth of media or they're buying $7 million worth of media, their retainer is the same. They don't get compensated because the advertising budget increases. That stays the same. And so we look every year at the ratio of the media buy to the agency overhead. And it should always fall around 85% media buy, 15% overhead. Sometimes it might be 18%. It might go down a little bit on a year when we're producing a television commercial. Or like in the first year when you're starting with creative and you're having a lot of overhead in creative production, your media buy might be a little bit smaller in that ratio. But that's something that we look at. So we're monitoring the work every week, every month, throughout the year, and then we're looking at those annual performance metrics, too, before we would say we would renew this contract for yet another year. And so that's the essence of how that selection is done. It's a very transparent process. It's documented through spreadsheets and checks and balances. And, you know, there's a lot of detail in there. If you wanted more, I'd be happy to share it with you. But that, in a nutshell, is how the agency is reviewed and retained and or if they were not performing, not retained. We would go out with another RFP to get it to seek a different agency.
Senator Meyer.
What kind of turnover has Barnhart had in their employees over the course of your relationship?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Meyer, I've been with the Office of Tourism. It'll be 11 years in June. So in that time frame, Barnhart has been the agency of record. I have worked with the company sold once, so I've worked with a different set of principals. The principal who is the owner now has been there since 2005. So he's consistency in the ownership. I've worked with maybe four different account managers, people who are on our account and manage it on a day-to-day basis. The current account manager has been there almost 3 years, and so that's one of the key people that are. There have been probably about five or six creative directors, not uncommon in the ad agency world. Copywriters and some of the other support people stay more consistently. Creative directors are a lot like chefs. You know, they get offers and have chances to move. But the principles and the ability to work with the same principles has been very satisfactory from our standpoint.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess the reason I ask that is because when you have turnover, if you don't take that into consideration, that maybe you want to follow the chef to the next restaurant.
Yep.
You know, and so do you have any way to keep track about, you know, how these creative directors have performed versus the next person that comes online? Do you have any metrics that are set out as far as what information you can give to the tourism board as far as their decision-making process?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Meyer, that's why we do the evaluation on the work. I mean, the work and the deliverables of what we charge them to do is where they're measured. You know, it is, and is, if they're a solvent company and they continue to do deliverables for us, unless they would start to infringe upon those, you know, they're meeting this. There's a standard that they have to meet. What we want them to do is meet well above the standard. And so as an ad campaign matures, year one, you might have a set of metrics. Year two, you're going to raise those metrics. Year three, they're going to go a little bit higher and a little bit higher because the campaign, the proof of a good ad agency is an ad campaign that delivers visitors. And you want those performance metrics to get better and better over time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, anything else?
Mr. Chairman. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Diane, just a couple quick questions on your 900 series list. Capital Tours and Travel, airline tickets for travel writers, journalists, and staff. Are we providing monies or paying for these people to stay overnight?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Burkhart, yes. We qualify travel writers. When they come to us, they have to be from a qualified outlet. There are many, many, many people who are freelance writers who can come and say they want to write a great story about Wyoming. But if they're not assigned to a qualified outlet, be it Condé Nast Traveler or the London Times or whatever that outlet may be, we don't just pay for an airline ticket. So then we qualify the travel writers. Internationally, we have a limit on so many a year. Domestically, we've been able to cover most of those that we want to bring in. And then the industry throughout Wyoming, depending on what they're interested in for product, provides most of the services when they're on the ground. If it's high season, we'll pay a media rate, which is that might not be the rack rate that they would be charging, you know, for their regular visitors, but we'll pay them. We'll pay a hotel for that travel writer to stay. Or maybe we'll pay for half of the nights, and the hotel will pick up the other half of the nights and provide that complimentary. But, yes, we do pay for travel writers and journalists to come to Wyoming and travel through Wyoming.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
A couple more. Let's see. We paid the State of Montana Department of Commerce for a filmmaker reception.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Burkhart, we at the Sundance Film Festival, at the L.A. Film Producers Forum, we partner with the Idaho and the Montana film offices, sometimes the South Dakota Office of Film, to host production location scouts. And sometimes they will contract with the services for food and beverage, reimburse that state. Sometimes the state of Wyoming will do it, and they reimburse us. But it's all part of a partnership for film production.
Thank you.
Okay. Someone else?
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, Senator Dockstad.
Thank you.
Speak up.
All right. Let me get this 85% clear. That's a straight-through buy. They have no pad, no profit in that. You're just reimbursing them, right?
Mm-hmm.
and so they're making their money on the other 15, right?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Doxeter, that's true. There's no commission on the media buy.
Okay. What do they say about Seattle, Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Doxeter, they say that it's it could be a lucrative market based on they're looking at national markets and performance. They also have competitive analysis for, like, we know what Montana spends in Chicago. We're looking at what competitors are doing. So they're analyzing a variety of these metrics and where they feel the campaigns can resonate. So it comes as the recommendation for Seattle, as a strong part of a recommendation in conjunction with the ad agency.
Okay. Anything else, Senator Doxeter?
Yeah, one more follow-up on that, Seattle. That's, what do we got there? What did we say? How much money to go up there?
$1.5 million.
A lot of money to go up the Pacific Northwest, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Doxeter, that's on the biennium, and it is both television, out-of-home, and a public relations endeavor. So it would be a big push for those initial years. You don't have to sustain the market with the same volume in subsequent years as in your introductory years, but it would be a big push. It's equivalent to what – it's less than what we spent when we went into Chicago. We went in with $2 million a year in Chicago, not on the biennium, but in a year. So this would be $750,000 a year. And we went in with about $600,000 into Portland a year when we opened Portland.
Okay. Now we go to Representative Wallace and Senator Perkins and Representative Esquivel. And it's 10 after 4.
All right.
We do.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I actually have several things that I wanted to hear about. One of them is Team Wyoming and how that's going and what it's doing for us.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Wallace, you all, I think most of you are familiar with a cowboy marketing program that we have where we sponsor professional rodeo athletes in Wyoming. And it's been in existence since 2005. It has become increasingly popular and something that it really draws a lot of attention for the state of Wyoming. What we've done is essentially taken it, we're using it as a public relations endeavor, an initiative for the Office of Tourism to put a voice and a face and a personality with the American cowboy. There's a love affair that the world has with the American cowboy, and we're giving them life and names and real ranches on which they work. There are 10 members currently. And a few of them have cycled off now and going into retirement that were with us. We picked up this year, well, I guess last year, J.R. Verzane was the first came on as a new member. There were 5 competitors at the National Finals Rodeo. The National Finals Rodeo is a big one because it's televised and the opportunity for us to do a lot of media interviews around that national championship is important. Also, we have a bullfighter who's a member. He's out of Metitzi, and he was named for the 3rd year in a row the Bullfighter of the Year by all the bull riders in the PRCA. He also just got the contract to fight bulls at Cheyenne Frontier Days, so he'll be here with this big rodeo this summer. So we're looking forward to another great year in 2014. The National Western Stock Show is taking place in Denver. Several members of Team Wyoming are competing down there this week, this weekend, next week. So it's going well, and thank you for your continued support. We also track that, the value of media that the cowboy marketing program generates, not just what it would generate in the pro rodeo sports news, but what it would generate in other social media outlets or in magazines or TV news stories. And it is, I don't have the number in front of me, but it's been close to $1 million a year just in the media equivalency of the stories and the kinds of media initiatives that we get from the Cowboy Marketing Program.
Okay. Senator Perkins, I think you were next.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I know that in the Rocky Mountain International, which my understanding is that coordinates all the international visits for our surrounding states, not including Colorado and Utah, I think. It's like Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, South Dakota, and
North Dakota.
North Dakota. And so anyway, just looking at those on, I mean, I was shocked when I've seen those numbers that the market share we have compared to those other states. Is that market share holding? I mean, it's like we get more international business than about the rest of those folks combined, if I remember right. And I'm just wondering if we're holding on that market share and if that's continuing to be a good effort for your group.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Perkins, Rocky Mountain International, we contract with them for our representation in Europe, five countries in Europe. They also coordinate a Scandinavian sales mission and an Australian sales mission. And it now, it has been, we've been in a partnership for 25 years with RMI, includes the states that you mentioned, and North Dakota will be coming on in 2015 as a fifth state. The value of doing cooperative marketing internationally with other states is the fact that those European visitors, as a rule, visit multiple states. They're here for sometimes up to 3 weeks. And so they are crossing state lines. You know, that it's not of concern to them. They might want to hit Glacier National Park, Mount Rushmore, Yellowstone, Cheyenne Frontier Days, or a variety of things to do in and around. So it continues to be a good investment for us. We spend right around $300,000 a year, $350,000 a year on that particular contract, and yet the full value of the marketing is at about $1.2 million. So we're really leveraging the association with other states. Our trip reports and the volume of business for Wyoming is by far the largest of any of those states. And that's thanks in large part to all overnight lodges within Yellowstone National Park sit in the boundaries of Wyoming. And so anyone who stays in Yellowstone National Park, the state of Wyoming is the beneficiary from the tax perspective of the taxes that are collected from those overnight accommodations. And obviously the national parks, from an international development perspective, are really the highlights of why most international visitors are interested. They love the American West, but the national parks is a keystone. And so we're lucky to have the parks that sit here and the national historic sites, and so they're a big part of what we're doing. We also have an international a representation in Japan, too, that's not part of the Rocky Mountain International.
Okay. Representative Escobel.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wallace asked my question, but I would nominate Representative Moniz to be on Team Wyoming.
Do we have a second?
We'll take him.
Okay. Moving right along. Any other questions on this? You still have one more part of your budget to still do?
Yes.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, I got to follow up on the
Senator Doxson.
I'm trying to see, are they in the budget? Last year we kind of brought them in the back door and added them on later, and I'm trying to see where they're at.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Doxson, are you asking about Team Wyoming? They were. We did not in our budget proposal last year propose eliminating that program. We were making some shifts in it. And what, as a legislative body, you directed us to do is to not make any shifts in it, to keep it as it was set up. And so they're not in a line item that you would see, but you would see under our 900 series, Brian Consulting, and they manage the payments to the Cowboys and take all and absorb the tax liability for that. So that is a that's where you would see the Cowboy marketing, the Cowboys contracts is under Brian Consulting.
Okay. The only other thing, Don, on this one, in terms of biannualization, we had $1 million budget cut, and it was not biannualized, correct? So we only saw it for 1 year of the 2 year standard budget?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Yeah. And $900,000 came from research co-op and sign grant availability.
Mm-hmm.
So, was there any? I mean, it doesn't sound like it had any impact. So you took it out and kept it out, and we appreciate that. We'd have liked to have seen double that. But anyway, okay. Anything else? All right. You have one more.
I do. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, on page 19, the other unit within the Wyoming Office of Tourism and our budget agency 066 is the Film Industry Financial Incentive. This is a program that was established in 2007, setting aside at that time it was $1 million on the biennium to be put into a fund specifically for reimbursement for film production companies that met a certain threshold when they were filming in Wyoming for a rebate on their Wyoming expenses. It was established to create awareness about Wyoming as a filming location and to grow economies and other careers in film production segment, and also to expand the presence of Wyoming either through storyline or by backdrops on the big and the small screen. And at this point, the standard for this by the statute is a $900,000 appropriation on the biennium. This money does not, by statute, revert back to the general fund on the biennium, so it rolls over. There is currently about $1.1 million sitting in the film industry financial incentive. There are some contracts that just came in that are pending approval. The process for approval is a film production company comes and contacts the film office. They fill out an application. They submit it to the Wyoming Film Office. There is a review committee made up of members of the tourism board and members of the industry who review it and make a recommendation for approval of the contract. It then goes to the tourism board for approval. We enter into a contract with that production company. All contracts are approved by the Wyoming Attorney General. Once the contract is in place, then the production company produces whatever, a television series or a documentary or a motion picture. And when they meet that threshold of $200,000 of purchasing Wyoming goods and services, then they can submit their receipts. And so when everything has wrapped up, the production is done, they submit binders with proof of residency of all employees who have worked on that particular project. So they have driver's licenses. They have to have proof that they are Wyoming citizens or residents. And then all receipts for other purchases of goods and expenditures while filming in Wyoming. And then that goes through an audit process. And then once all of those expenditures have been verified, then the company is reimbursed anywhere from 12 to 15% based on what was approved first for that production.
Okay. You have $1.1 million in there?
Yes.
Okay, and how many, what do you request for the rest of this? You talked about some that are in the pipeline. How much money are they potentially looking at?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, we're requesting that the $900,000 be appropriated on the biennium.
No, that's not my question. Oh. My question is, you say you have something in the pipeline now. You have $1.1 million. How much do you anticipate spending between now and June 30th to end this current biennium we're in? Get that to me later. I don't need it now if you can't get it. The question is, if you've got that much money, there's no need. We don't need to have $900,000 in there. You already have $1 million in it.
If I might respond to that, Mr. Chairman.
I thought you might.
Thank you for asking the questions about it, because we can easily get you what's in the pipeline and what the history is. The one point of consideration for having the money there is when a major production comes, is you can only provide back what's in that fund. So as those monies go down, if a major motion picture, like the productions of Django Unchained, for example, that was filmed on location in Teton County last year, was a Quentin Tarantino film, their rebate was $350,000 based on a 10-day shoot. If there were the opportunity to have a big production here, if the money's not in that fund, then we can't use the incentive toward it. I just offered that up for your consideration.
I understand. Okay. I do understand that.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Everything Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Diane, how much of Longmire is actually filmed in Wyoming?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Moniz, nothing right now, but they were in Buffalo this year for Longmire Days. Clay Biller, who's on our board, hosted a lot of the cast up at Paradise Guest Ranch for a ride. They're looking at doing some of their B-roll work now in Wyoming. They looked at Wyoming several times in the scouting of this, but we don't have the infrastructure to support a television series. So they, in New Mexico where they film on location, there's actually a production house for that kind of turnaround, and they have the crew.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. What do you, what kind of infrastructure do they need to support that? Or what are we talking about?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Moniz, I will have to get you some more, a summary of what might be involved. But it is, it's very comprehensive in terms of the turnaround in a short filming period for the production, because they go into a lab right there at the University of New Mexico and build this out. So it's the state of New Mexico has built an industry around film production for the purpose of film production. So they're able to do much more. We're growing in crew. There's an associate's program at Central Wyoming College for film production, and they have about 8 students a year that go through that program. You can get an associate's degree. We hire those students on a lot of projects, or the production companies do. We don't, but we refer them to those. But I can get you some more information.
Representative Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, Diane, did they, in honor of the Oscar nominations this morning, did Nebraska make any application for the filming that they did here?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Thompson, yes, they did. Is theirs in there yet? Do we know what theirs is? Okay. Well, we can tell you what that is. But that, great film that's up for, I think, 5 Academy Awards, did someone say? That I hear today, shot on location in Sheridan, Gillette, and a whole scene at the lake stop at Lake DeSmet.
How much money did they get from this fund?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know. I'm going to have to check to see what their application was. I'll respond back to you on that one. If they hit the $200,000.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Having attended Longmire Days, which was kind of a blast, by the way, that event obviously drew in gobs of tourists and people from who knows where. For those of you who weren't there, the town was just absolutely packed. They ran out of food. You stood in line for hours to get an autograph. It was really quite amazing what that pulled in, and I'm sure you've got statistics on what that did for that little town.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Wells, I don't know them off the top of my head, but I do know that it was a raging success. And so when something like that was written by an author who lives in Wyoming, you try to leverage all the other ways that you can get the benefit of it, like Longmire Days. And we do a lot of contests around Walt Longmire and what would Walt Longmire do through social media and just gathering that. And we've done some promotions with A&E on the DVD sales of the seasons, where there's promotions for Wyoming that are tied to those DVD sales. So there is a relationship with Longmire, the series, just not filmed here in Wyoming, unfortunately.
Okay. Any other questions on the film's incentive? You know, one of the things that it occurs to me, and you don't have to respond this morning editorial, but if you have the excitement that you show about these markets and you have money in there, it might be a better place to put this money into some of these markets. But that's a decision that we can talk about. Okay. Anything else, committee? President Wallace.
Mr. Chairman, there was one thing that occurred to me a while back. We, visited with the Game and Fish, and one of the things that they have, of course, is their very beautiful and wonderful Wyoming Wildlife magazine, which they're trying to figure out how to make sustainable and manage to keep doing that into the future. Have you guys ever had any discussions with Director Talbot or others about the tourism benefit that we get from that magazine and ways that we might work together to enhance that effort?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Wallace, I've had many discussions with Director Talbot about a variety of things. There's a lot of common things that we work on, from the work that Game and Fish does and the Office of Tourism. And certainly, I always say that they manage and take care of a product that we market and sell. The non-consumptive viewing of wildlife is a huge activity that visitors enjoy. And I was just in Yellowstone National Park and squeal when we see buffalo and elk and all of the other things that are there. But the actual magazine itself, they need to do some research on that to find out more about their own audiences, which they're doing. They're trying to determine that. But we do sell that magazine for them. We have it available in all of our welcome centers, and so it's part of an offering that we have to visitors as they go throughout the state.
Okay. Well, Diane, thank you very much for a very informative, and I love your enthusiasm. You're doing a great job for Wyoming, and it's catching. You know, we even got some JAC members to start smiling and getting excited. So you know that you're making progress with us. And yeah, I'm glad that we, you know, maybe we should have tourism right after corrections the next time around to get us all excited about the. And thank you all the board members for your service. I know you're well paid to do this. And thanks for being here as well. And you know, we as a legislature and the Appropriations Committee, you know, we have to look at the revenue stream and prioritize. That's why we're elected. And we weigh these and balance them. And this is a program that has some real merit. So thank very much for what you do and for being here. And anything else, committee? With that, your excuse. Good luck.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it.
Okay, let's go off live. Goodbye, Wyoming.